where we say it's all those appropriations in that section are available until spent.
And our continuing in our 27 section 4 starts with the appropriations for the PCA. The first one there is for TMDL studies and TMDL implementation plans. And this has a similar provision. And then there's a paragraph B on the Senate side.
And Madam Chair,
excuse me, Mr. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just had a clarifying question on the Senate language under wastewater reuse, the 27.22 and the 27.26. Through there, it talks about $1 million in the first years for grants to ethanol plants that are within 1 and 1/2 miles of a city. I mean, are there plants? Are there several plants? Or are there one plant? Or I'm trying to see what that means.
Senator Rummel.
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, we have at least one and possibly several plants that would qualify under this provision. And it's an innovative project to demonstrate how reusing gray water can relieve excess use of groundwater to fulfill certain purposes.
Representative Davids.
I might have to defer to Mr. Knopf. I think one is in Senator Rosen's district, and I think Senator Olsen has some plants that might qualify.
Madam Chair, Representative Davids, not to my knowledge. The one I know that's the furthest along in developing a proposal is the one in Senator Rosen's district. I can't remember exactly the name of which ethanol plant it is, but.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. And Madam Chair,
Representative Wagenius.
Okay.
Madam Chair, if we back up a little bit, I want to explain on R27. We've got some set and only language. This deals with the Buffalo River watershed, and this is part of the PCA. Has been starting to work with the Buffalo River watershed.
What line, please, Mr.
Oh, I'm
Knopf.
Sorry. It's 30.3 through 30.24 on the Senate side. And it's a pilot project. It gets at the whole idea that I don't know how much you heard from the PCA about going to more of a watershed approach to doing the TMDL studies. And what this is a pilot project to continue. They actually have started this work. And the Senate committee was impressed with how far they'd gone already and wanted to make sure that they continued this project. And it does align with what the direction that the agency is going in.
And it's supplementary?
Madam Chair, yes, it's supplementary.
How much is put in for this in the omnibus bills?
Madam Chair, there was nothing for this in the omnibus bill.
Thank you. Representative Wagenius?
If I remember correctly, the testimony on our side was that if we fully funded the TMDLs for 10 years, or getting on a 10-year cycle, that this project would be taken care of, and we fully funded for 10, year three and year four.
Madam Chair, that was a testimony in the Senate side, but the Senate thought we might as well include the language that was part of the bill that was brought to the committee to just to make sure it gets done and just to note this pilot project that has already begun. Madam Chair, you've got some House-only language on 24.7.
Yes, Ms. Taylor?
On page R28, the paragraph B, this is money for the development of an enhanced TMDL database, and also had a little bit of money set aside for rules, and this was part of the governor's recommendations. And then paragraph C is the House's provision for wastewater reuse projects, and this is funding a statute that was set up last year. Similar to the one that the Senate has, but this one goes through PCA, and the Senate provision goes through the PFA, and there's a slightly different ways in how they're targeted. The House is a little bit more broad. And then paragraph D, there's some money for some groundwater assessment and drinking water protection. The House did go back to PCA and wanted some outcomes, and you'll see those on clauses 1, 2, and 3 on the bottom of page R28. And then moving on to page R29, there's an appropriation here to retest the Minnesota River, similar to what was done in the past, to kind of see what progress has been made. Paragraph F is an appropriation for the Clean Water Partnership Program. And then on the bottom of R29, both the House and Senate have money set aside for endocrine disruptor monitoring. There's a few differences. The House is a little bit more targeted. You'll see some language later on in the bill. And this is the House position is to target this monitoring both up and downstream of wastewater treatment facilities. And then moving on to page R30, paragraph H on the top. Is some money. This was from a bill sponsored by Representative Scalzi related to coal tar. It provides some money to the agency to notify local units of government of the potential contamination issues resulting from the use of coal tar sealants. And then it also provides some grant money. And you'll see some language later on specifying some other responsibilities that they'll have. Paragraph I, this is an appropriation for a restoration project in the St. Louis River. This was a governor's rec, and it looks like the Senate split that into two appropriations.
Yeah, Madam Chair, the only addition on the Senate side is the clarification that it's $2 of non-state money for every dollar of state money, so that it... apparently, we were told that that would be the case with the federal money. We wanted to make sure that that was in the rider.
And moving on the subdivision 9 on the Senate side, and then the House lines 26, 22. This is some technical language for the grants and contracts, just making them available till June 2013. And then there's some Senate-only language. And I just want to point out this is similar to what was vetoed in the omnibus bill.
Yes, Madam Chair, the Senate does have the statewide assessment and monitoring in here, and I know it is comparable to what, not quite as much money, but comparable to what was vetoed in the omnibus bill. And Madam Chair, I think we've got some Senate-only provisions in R31. The top one on R31 was is the River Watch program. There was an appropriation. It's 28.10 through 28.22. There was an appropriation in that did survive in the omnibus bill for this, but it wasn't the full amount that was being requested. This is the difference from what was passed in the omnibus bill using general fund money and what the request for appropriations were for the Riverwatch program. And then in paragraph C on 28.23 to 29.3, This was a proposal that was brought to the Senate on doing a comprehensive approach between Wisconsin, the National Park Service, and the state for water monitoring phosphorus reduction activities on the St. Croix River. And you'll notice that on 28.34, it says that the appropriation is available to the extent matched by non-state sources. So it has to be matched either by the Federal Park Service or the state of Wisconsin for it to be expended for that purpose. And then, Madam Chair, in Subdivision 3, the Senate has some language. This was part of the G16 recommendations on TMDL development civic engagement. You'll see a small amount of money, a couple $100,000, for the Pollution Control Agency to civic engagement in the TMDL development process. And then you'll see some named entities that they should consider as part of to be involved in that process. And then they have to give a report back on the types of civic engagement that they're involved in.
And on the bottom of page R32, you start the appropriations for the Department of Natural Resources. And here the House just took the governor's recommendations for the TMDL and groundwater protection activities. And that would continue on to the top of page R33. And then paragraph E is the LIDAR appropriation. The Senate has some similar language. However, the House does put some additional requirements, especially about the any contracting that would take place through this project. There were some concerns on the House side about outsourcing this particular project and the data going overseas. Then on page R34, both the House and Senate have an appropriation for the Mississippi River Corridor Critical Area rulemaking, and you'll see some statutory language later on. On the page R35, both the House and Senate has some money for the County Geological Atlas. What you're seeing now is the DNR portion. Later on, the House has the appropriation for the U, and the Senate has this as a combined appropriation. I do want to point out that the House does have some language that defines sustainable use of groundwater. And then there's a Senate-only provision.
Yeah, Madam Chair, that's
Mr. Knopf.
That's subdivision 2 on 22.3. You'll see money for acquiring aquatic management areas for non-point source restoration to address water quality protection under a total debt on a TMDL implementation plan.
And on the bottom of page R35 and continuing on R36 is the start of the appropriations for Bowser. The House wanted to do something different, so you'll see three different appropriations, all with the intent of keeping water on the land. The first one, paragraph A, provides an appropriation for conservation easements and some restoration money for riparian buffers. The second, paragraph B, provides some money for grants to watershed districts and watershed management organizations for structures and vegetation structure, just kind of like rain gardens and those types of things. And then there's also, on if you look at the top of page R37, there's a note that priority may be given to school projects. On the House, we had received some testimony on a bill about a school pilot project, and we felt it may be better if they were to go through a competitive grant program. And then on paragraph C is the last of those three appropriations, and this would be for additional non-point source pollution grants, and these are targeted again to watershed districts, watershed management organizations, and also soil and water conservation districts, and again with the same purpose of keeping water on the land.
And Madam Chair,
Mr. Knopf.
On the Senate side, we have it's a broader provision that for grants. In fact, a couple of things. One, the House says up to 5% may be used for administering the grants. The Senate says at least 93% must be made available for grants. So it's a difference between 5 and 7. And then also on the Senate side, in 2219, at least 20% must be for water quality grants in the Twin Cities metropolitan area. And then there's a specific provision on 22.22 where the Senate sets aside some money for the Anoka Conservation District for the Metropolitan Landscape Restoration Program. It's a metro-wide program, but it's being done by the Anoka Conservation District.
And then on the top of page R38, paragraph D, this is from a bill sponsored by Representative Hansen, and what it does is it adds wellhead protection areas under the RIM program, and this would provide an appropriation for conservation easements on wellhead protection areas. And you'll see some statutory language later on. And then paragraph E is the House's additional appropriation for feedlot water quality grants, and again, these are targeted at areas where there's 300 animal units. Under 300 animal units. And then subdivision 9 on the Senate side and paragraph F are fairly similar appropriations for shoreline protection and restoration grants. There's some slight differences in how they're worded.
And Madam Chair,
Knopf.
On the top of page R39, the Senate-only provision, and some of this money would be used for Hennepin County for repairing, restoration, and stream bank stabilization in the 10 primary stream systems. There was a bill that the Senate heard on this and included that as a specific appropriation for that purpose.
And then the next provision is some language requiring the board to contract with the MCC. Both the Senate and House have very similar provisions requiring $500,000 each year to be contracted with them. Then on the bottom of page R39, there's some language that allows the board to shift grant or cost share funds to provide technical and administrative assistance. And if you look at the bottom of the Senate language, you'll see the comparable language on their side, but they do have some additional language prior to that.
Yeah, Madam Chair, on 26.12 to 26.2, and a couple of things are going on there. One, it says that they can carry forward and backward appropriations, and it also says that if any of their grant programs must be run through their normal local water grant program, which is under is 103B.3369. So included that it would have to be, they have to do it through that program.
Okay. I lost my place. Mr. Knopf.
Madam Chair, it's 26.12 to 26.21.
On what page?
R39. That's on the Senate side.
We don't have 26.
Page R39?
R39.
You look on the Senate side.
Third column down.
The third rider paragraph. Down. 26.12, if the appropriation of the section in either year is insufficient.
Don't have it.
We have 24.6 on page R39.
Madam Chair, do you have the side-by-side with the 12:10 p.m.?
Madam Chair, no. The members are working off of a slightly different dated side-by-side than staff is. So I think to go forward, we should read the page and line numbers, not in terms of the R39, R40s. That's where you guys are getting lost. Instead, we'll try to read the house line 2411 to 2420 and things like that. That way you'll be able to follow us. If you're talking about Hennepin County, Greg, you're talking about R39 on the pages they're looking at.
And that's where I started getting lost.
Right. Well, Madam Chair, I don't have the earlier version, so I'm not sure where it's located in that version.
Keep it interesting.
But it's not on mine.
So. What's the line number?
R47.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chen, it's 26.12 to 26.21 on the Senate.
R47. R47, ma'am. Madam Chair.
Yeah, Madam Chair, you will find the top of page R47.
Found it.
Yep. You've got an earlier version of the side-by-side. I thought the reviser had changed it, and I thought everybody was getting the same one. So that, just to be clear, it allows carry forward and carry backward of those appropriations, and then it also requires the Board of Water and Soil Resources to use their normal local water grant program for issuing the grants on the Senate side. You don't have anything similar on the House side. Now, we also have the same language on the 2013 date for an extension of grants when they've been encumbered by the end of the biennium. But, Madam Chair, we should probably go back to page R40.
Madam Chair, on lines House lines 3227, the House has some language that requires the board to give priority to projects that complement, supplement, or exceed current state standards for protection, enhancement, and restoration of water quality in lakes, rivers, and streams. And then on lines 32-33, you'll see the native vegetation and seed language again. And then on lines 33.7 through 33.21, there's a, the House has a reporting requirement. The Senate has a similar provision. There are some differences in what's required of those.
And, Madam Chair, the Senate has a more ambitious, with including the board and the Commissioner of Natural Resources and the Pollution Control Agency, and then also appropriates money for that purpose. I don't think the House had money for that.
Thank you.
And, Madam Chair.
Mr. Knopf, page R42.
R42. R41 on mine, but R42. We get into the, I've got to make sure I've got the right. Well, we've got, first of all, in R41, we have the subdivision four, the non-point restoration, technical assistance, and engineering, some money for Bowser for that purpose. On the Senate side, we also have money for subsurface sewage on R42, subdivision 5, for subsurface sewage treatment system program, and also in subdivision 6 for the failing subsurface sewage treatment systems program, and then also for the local non-point source activity support in subdivision 8. And then below that in 32.19, we have the non-point civic engagement. You'll notice that the line numbers aren't sequential here because the Senate is kind of carved up to match with the House. And these are kind of the leftovers at the end. And then, so you'll see the same language on the civic engagement on the top of page R43 that we had with the TMDL ones. This is money for Bowser for civic engagement. And then at the bottom of page R43, the Senate also includes grants to the Star Lake Board and for a pilot program to focus on engaging citizen participation and fostering local partnerships. Some money for that, too. And then I guess we'll get back to the Department of Health.
So on the bottom of page R43, and then continuing on R44, the appropriations for the Department of Health, and the House picked up the governor's recommendations but did contact the department and asked for some more specific outcomes, and so that's why there's additional language from what the Senate provisions have.
And Madam Chair, just to make, Senator Rummel did have a bill too that also put in some more specificity on what's going to happen, but the Senate just chose not to include the specific language on what they were going to be doing and just appropriating the money for the same purpose.
And then moving on to Section 8, this is the University of Minnesota appropriations, and you'll see the money for the County Geological Survey, or the geological atlases that we run into earlier when we were going through the DNR, and then there's an additional appropriation for $750,000 for the 25-year framework that the U will be doing for the Clean Water Fund that you'll see some language on later on. And then I believe the Senate's language is on opposite, so I don't know if...
Yeah, Madam Chair, that's the Subdivision 5. That's the Sustainable Water Resources Framework. The Senate, I think there's basically it's a smaller provision rather than putting uncodified language that's just shown in the rider. You see the House's language later. It didn't quite line up. And, Madam Chair, then we have the appropriation conditions again. On each of these, where there's grants involved, the Senate, if you look at 37.9 through 37.13, you'll see that, again, we're allowing the grants to be carried forward as long as they are encumbered by the end of the biennium. And Madam Chair, then we have the legislature. The House has language in Section 9.
Ms. Taylor.
This may be a little bit farther on in your side-by-side, but it's Section 9 on page R46. There's an appropriations for the legislature, and this is, again, for the additional requirements that are established in Article 5 for the restoration audits and then the website and other duties.
And, Madam Chair, on the Senate side, there's some money to the Legislative Coordinating Commission for the cost of developing and implementing the website on the Senate side, with money coming from each of the outdoor funds. And then, Madam Chair, we have a, looks like a number of kind of shirt tails that were left on the Senate side that are kind of carved out, partly because of the way we did this in the Senate, where we appropriated by function. You'll see on, like, on 21.34 in the Senate to 22.2, you'll see in each one of these sections, there's a, it specifies that they are for the protection, enhancement, and restoration of lakes, rivers, and streams using the constitutional language. You'll also see the conditions and the grants, and then you'll see in Section 4 the same language. This is just stuff that was kind of left over that was part of the Senate bill, but because it didn't match up with the House side, they put it at the end for each one of the sections on the Senate side, the way the Senate organized it by sections based upon the activity that was going on. The one thing that you'll see, and I think it's, well, the page and line numbers on the bill are 31.30. You'll see a Metropolitan Master Plan implementation where there's money for the Metropolitan Council to develop their Master Water Supply Plan. That's not on the House side. And then again, we have the appropriation conditions and the education and public engagement. This is the base language that comes at the beginning of each of the Senate sections dealing with those specific topics. And you'll see the language there. Again, this is related mostly because of the way the Senate organized that these are just kind of left at the end because the bill is or the side-by-side is organized by agency the same as the House was. And then there's some House only after that.
Then on page R49, this is the beginning of the statutory language, and sections 10 through 12 are from Representative Hansen's Wellhead Protection Area provision, and this is just the statutory changes that would be required to add those areas to be eligible for the RIM, and it also includes some of the statutory changes that are traveling separately in the policy bill, House File 27 or 1237.
Yep, Madam Chair, the Senate doesn't, on Section 10 on the House side, the Senate doesn't have anything like that on the changes to the agricultural BMP loan program, but the Section 11 on the House side, the Senate does have something comparable. Well, a little bit different. That's in Senate File 1110. That's on the floor.
Rep. Sim Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to clarify, the Section 10 isn't mine. That came from Representative Junkie's committee, forwarded as language. But I think there are similar things that have maybe passed in other bills on some of the RIM language, possibly, in the last couple of days, maybe.
Yeah. Madam Chair, yes, I misspoke. It'd be 11 and 12 are the RIM wellhead protection. And as Representative Hansen stated, the Section 10 was a provision that came through the Agricultural Finance Committee.
And again, with Section 12, Madam Chair, we do have something comparable in the policy bill, Senate File 1110. Senator Chaudhry carries that. The one difference I just want to note here is that the Senate reinstated some language dealing with extreme drought conditions for that. So,
and then moving on, Section 13 on the House side is a provision that came from Representative Scalzi's bill on coal tar, and this would prohibit agencies from purchasing undiluted coal tar sealant. And then Sections 14 and Senate Section 9, this is the Mississippi River Corridor critical area. There's a few differences in Subdivision 1. The House has some language about dynamic and environmental on line 3733. And then there's just some slight difference in how they're phrased, how the statement is made in Clause 2. And then throughout, you'll see that the House adds its corridor. Just to clarify that all these standards are going to apply both to the river and its corridor. Page R52. There's some small differences again in Subdivision 2, line 3834, and the administration rules. The House added other interested parties to the people that the commissioner must consult with. And the Senate has some language on 3834, just specifying that the resource is a multi-purpose resource. And then there's some small technical differences as well. And also in subdivision 2, clause 4, there's a little bit of differences in how the wastewater effluent language is treated. Again, with the Mississippi River and its corridor in clause 5. And then you'll see a new paragraph C that's a house-only provision. This is a non-conformity related provision that came in on the house floor. And then on subdivision 3, the districts, there's some slight differences. The House or the Senate adds that they shall be established by rule. They specify that as by rule. And then the House says that the commissioner must minimize the number of districts. The Senate says the commissioner must seek to determine an appropriate number. The House is requiring the districts to account for existing ordinances, and then the Senate has some additional language about municipal plans and policies. There was one other clarification in clause 1. The House states that the major features of the river in existence, and instead of all resources that existed as of March 12, 1979, in the Senate side. And then moving on to subdivision 4, and starting on 40.12, the standards. Looks like the Senate has a few other, those same by rule and the municipal plans and policies language that they added. And much of the language is the same. If you, there's a small technical difference. And then moving on to subdivision 5, application. The House just made some technical changes to better fit what was actually being done by the Met Council and the commissioner. So you'll notice that the Met Council now, on the House side, they're supposed to incorporate these rules when plans and regulations, and we remove then reviewing development permit applications because they don't do that. And then also with the commissioner having approving plans and regulations and reviewing development permit applications, that's slightly different than the Senate, just to clarify what the commissioner actually does. Moving on to subdivision 6, starting on 42.1, the notification and fees. The House no longer has the requirement that local units of government, if they don't provide notification to the commissioner, there used to be a fee that the Senate side still has. There's a late fee if they fail to submit the information. The House does not have that, but does have the language about the commissioner being able to recover fees for reviewing the information submitted. And then there's just a small difference in the Subdivision 7 rules. The House has under Chapter 14, just to specify what the rulemaking start should, what that entails. Section 15 is more of the coal tar language from Representative Scalzi's bill, and this is additional requirements of the PCA there to notify local governments of the potential for contaminated water from coal tar sealants, and then requires local units of government or those regulated actually that require permits to inventory their current stormwater ponds and provide that to the PCA. And then the PCA is also required to develop some best management practices and then also incorporate these into their next permitting process. And then Section 16, a house-only provision. This is some language related to a previous appropriation for endocrine disruptors. This specifies how the PCA should establish their network for monitoring the endocrine disruptors, and this will, goes into where those need to be located, both up and downstream of wastewater treatment facilities. And then on the very end there, there's some additional language that requires a report, and also paragraph E specifies in quite a lot of detail on what exactly should be monitored. And then that includes Article 2. And
Madam Chair.
Senator Cohen.
Just a quick question. Just out of curiosity, how was that list put together in paragraph E?
Madam Chair, I believe it was some language put together by both you and PCA staff, if I'm not mistaken, but I could be. I don't know if anyone from the PCA is here, but I believe that that was worked on, and maybe Representative Wagenius may have a...
Representative Wagenius.
I'm sorry, to ask me the question.
Madam Chair, Representative Wagenius, I'm just curious, in paragraph E, where the variety of listings came from, if that's a federal list or... And Ms. Taylor said it's a PCA list.
No, it's actually, we are asking the University of Minnesota is looking at wastewater treatment systems and from a civil engineering point of view, how they can better protect our waters. And they need to know, in order to do that, some of the chemicals that are getting into the waters. So the beginnings of that list actually came from the University of Minnesota Civil Engineering Department. The PCA added to that list. So you will see the things that must be included are the ones that the University of Minnesota Civil Engineers gave us, and the ones that are additional ones are ones that the PCA gave us.
Okay. Thanks.
Senator Rummel was...
I'll just ditto what Representative Wagenius said. The department came to us with clarifying language that would be enable them to do this in the proper way. We apparently had some language that was fuzzy for them, so this clarifies from the department's point of view what they can do.
Okay. Let's go on.
Okay. Article 3, then Section 1, there's just a small technical difference. Section 2 is the beginning of the appropriations for the Department of Natural Resources. There are some money differences, and then if you look at the House side, the Senate purpose is about the same. The House just specifies in detail what outcomes you would get for the money. So if you paragraph A is the entire appropriation for the DNR, and then under that you would clause 1 would be in a for connecting people to the outdoors, also a provision on the Senate side, and then it goes on to state how they would do that, increasing the number of naturalists. Also there's a new Minnesota Naturalist Corps on the House side, sponsored by Representative Knuth, and you'll see the statutory language later on for that. And it continues on about marketing, opening some new visitor centers, and all this was worked out with the DNR. And then if you move on to Clause 2, you'll also see the Senate has very similar language. And then, again, the House that would use some of the money for accelerating natural resource management. And, again, you'll see the House specifies what that would entail, restoring state park land and some other measures. And then on Clause 3, accelerating facility maintenance and rehabilitation. And again, you'll see the House state what that would entail. And then the Senate has similar language, and you also see that they have additional, including energy efficiency improvements and the use of renewable sources of energy. But you'll see this that same purpose later on as we move.
Madam Chair.
Senator Fredrickson.
Madam Chair, on the House side, lines 47, 13, 47, 14. What does that mean?
On page R 62.
Our, the book I have is R 61. Page 47, lines 13 and 14.
Madam Chair, it states upgrading at least 3% of the facilities in overnight and day use areas. And the DNR might want to provide more clarification on what this means. It would just require them to update some of their facilities at their parks or other day use areas.
Madam Chair, I can read that, but I still don't understand what we're expecting the department to do with this language.
Representative Lilly.
Madam Chair and Senator Fredrickson, some of the goals to this section is that we're trying to be more specific in the projects, not just just having a general appropriation. I'm sure that's what's leading to the question. We had an opportunity to sit down with the DNR, and they actually worked quite extensively on some of these outcomes, and these are outcomes they felt were, for the most part, very achievable, and try to meet the goals of the constitutional amendment to get more folks out using what we have. And one of the ways here is, and you know, specifically to this, we're trying to get more facilities upgraded, and so that they can do better use in overnight and whatnot. So,
Representative Guimias.
I think these are as simple as picnic tables and that kind of thing that just wears out in a park. If I remember correctly, that is what that is referring to.
So we're going to replace picnic tables.
Well, could you look at all the lists of the things we are are doing with this language? They're all varieties of things, and working in percentages and number of miles to have, so we could tell citizens, I believe, exactly what they were getting for their money. And I think it's a fair question to ask DNR exactly what they're buying for this 3%, 3% of the facilities. We will ask them.
Go on, please.
And then on starting on page R63, here you'll see the House's language relating to the energy conservation projects, and again you'll see some additional language specifying what that would entail, some installing of some solar energy at various parks, and it's all specified there. On line 49.1 and then the Senate language 43.29, this is some language requiring contracting with MCC, similar to what we've seen before. The Senate side is slightly different and doesn't specify an amount. The House on line 49.6 requires the commissioner to leverage any federal stimulus funding available. And then on 49.9, you'll see the native vegetation language again. And then on 49.18, paragraph B, this is a provision brought by Representative Knuth for solar for grants for solar projects. And these would be available for both metro and outstate regional parks. There is some priority language for solar thermal technology. On paragraph C, line 50.14, this is the appropriation for regional parks. It's available to both metro and outstate parks, and there's some language allowing the department to use up to 2.5% for administering the grant program. Similar to the Senate, there's a slightly different way on how the criteria works, but otherwise there's similar provisions outside of the money, which the Senate side is slightly higher.
Well, Madam Chair, I don't think there's
Mr.
a lot. There's not a big difference in who would be eligible. It's just the Senate says it in fewer words because basically it's a trail of regional or statewide significance. The House says that too, but then basically talks about within the metro, outside of the metro, and but it basically would be for those that meet the constitutional requirement. It basically says the same thing.
Ms. Taylor.
Moving on to line 5032. This is the language requiring the commissioner to develop a 10-year strategic state parks and trail plan. The Senate has a similar provision, and also they have some language about the 25-year framework, and that appears later on the House side. And then on paragraph E, 51.3, this is a provision that would require the commissioner, in consultation with the PCA, the Bowser, and others, to develop a logo to be used on the signage for the constitutional amendment. And then the Senate has a similar provision, but it's goes through the LCC. I don't know if Senate, you know.
Yep, Madam Chair, on the Senate side, what this would be is a contest sponsored by the LCC to develop a logo for use for all three of the outdoor funds, the Outdoor Heritage, Clean Water, and Parks and Trails. And you'll see a paragraph B. The House later on has some provisions that deal with putting a sign up. What this says is that they have to put a sign up at all access points to any land or water resources that were either acquired in fee or restored, protected, or enhanced. So that's the Senate language on the signs. You'll see some later language in Article 5, I think, on the House side dealing with signs.
And then paragraph F, 51.14, this requires the commissioner to submit a report on the use of the funds. The Senate has a similar provision. There's a little slight differences on when they're due, and the House has this due March 1st each year, and the Senate has the first report due March 1st, but then the subsequent year, January 15th. And then paragraph G, 51.23 on the House side, this is some language just requiring that grant agreements entered into by the commissioner ensure that the funds are used to supplement and not substitute for traditional funding.
R66.
And then sections 3 on both the House and Senate side, this is the appropriation for the Met Council. Paragraph A is the money that would go through the grant program. You'll see some statutory language later on. And then paragraph B is very similar to the Commissioner of Natural Resources report, and you'll see the same differences on the House and Senate side about when those are due. And then you'll also see that the Met Council also has to enter into grant agreements and ensure that those are used to supplement and not substitute for traditional sources of funding. And then there's some Senate-only language.
Yeah, Madam Chair.
Mr. Knopf.
On 44.15 to 44.19, the Senate also includes some language similar to what you saw for the state parks, basically encouraging, giving them consideration for contracting with the MCC, you know, similar so that the metropolitan parks would also do the same thing.
And then Section 4, this is the appropriation for the legislature, and this would be the Parks and Trails portion of the LCC money for the website and other duties, and then the restoration audits. And then Section 5 is some language about the availability of the appropriations. And then Section 6 is the language I had mentioned on the Minnesota Naturalist Corps brought by Representative Knuth. It establishes a corps similar to the Conservation Corps, but this would be run by the DNR like the MCC used to be, and this language is fairly similar to the language that originally established the MCC. And then Section 7 is the Parks and Trails grant program I mentioned earlier. The Senate does have some an additional sentence saying grants shall not be made under this section for state parks, state recreation areas, or state trails. And then the House has an extra subdivision 2 on eligibility, and this is the same eligibility requirements that you saw in the grant programs when we were walking through the rider language.
And, Madam Chair, again, the Senate did look at doing something similar to this, but it just basically you're kind of defining that it has to be a regional statewide significance. I mean, if you boil it down, so they saw no need to include that because Subdivision 1 already says that it's for trails of regional statewide significance.
And Subdivision 3 and Subdivision 2 priorities, these are virtually identical. There's just how their structure is a little bit different, so it's just a technical issue. And then the matching requirements are the same. In Subdivision 5, the House does have a rule exemption for just stating that these aren't subject to rulemaking the grant process. That would conclude Article 3.
Thank you.
Madam Chair,
Mr. McCormick.
I'm going to start working through Article 4 on page R71 in the booklet that the House has. You'll see that Section 1 on both sides are the boilerplate appropriation language. The Senate has some additional technical language. Moving to the next page, Subdivision 2 on the Senate side.
Senator Fredrickson.
Madam Chair, can we pause for just a second? I think Senator Cohen would like to be here and go through this section.
Okay. Let's take Article 8.
Is Article 8 or is Article 8?
It's a matter of should take my second.
Where's the arts? Madam Chair.
It's cute.
Yeah, Article 8 is a House-only provision. It appropriates $2 million from the Outdoor Heritage Fund to the Commissioner of Ag to prevent, just protect forests from pests similar to the emerald ash borer that we've heard about today and other plant pests, and does provide up to $125,000 immediately to the Commissioner to update the state's invasive and exotic tree pest plans. And then Section 2 would is a quarantine provision for that would prevent the entry of firewood into the state. Put some requirements on any firewood that would enter into the state. It needs to be aged at least 2 years, has been heated sufficiently, or is either transported or will be received by a person who has entered into a compliance agreement with the commissioner.
And Madam Chair, the Senate doesn't have anything on the quarantine or the appropriation. Just a note on the quarantine for Senate members and House members. The Department of Agriculture has this authority to establish a quarantine. They can do this on their own. They can establish any size. They've got all kinds of enforcement powers to do this. In fact, something to note here is that Section 2 wouldn't become effective until July 1. I'm not sure if that was intentional or not, but it would be effective on July 1st. And again, I know the commissioner is already working on doing some quarantine activities right now, but they do have the full authority in 18G.06 to do this and just to make specify it however they want to.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And they may have the authority, but this law's proposed provision says that they will do it.
Well,
not that they may do it, but they will do it because they haven't done it. And now we have a big problem because they haven't done it. And they won't do it until we tell them to do it.
Madam Chair, just one issue on that. I mean, it would be July 1st. And it also, if you look at on 101.11, it says a quarantine may be modified or repealed at the direction the commissioner has provided. So basically, it said the commissioner could still repeal, could still not do this or modify it to any way the commissioner wants to.
Oh, interesting. Senator Cohen's in the room now. Ms. McCormick.
Madam Chair, working on Article 4 of the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Section 1 is the boilerplate appropriation language. The Senate has a few technical improvements that the House doesn't have. Turning to next page, we have appropriations on the House side for the Minnesota Board of the Arts. We limit their administration to 2.5%, allow a number of carry-forward provisions, have some language requiring the grant programs to be separately administered from other state appropriations. And then the House language continues to make appropriations to regional art boards, statewide arts access, an Arts Economic Development Fund, and a census of Minnesota artists and artistic organizations.
Madam Chair.
Yes. Wait a minute now. Ms. Doyle Fontaine?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Madam Chair, on the Senate side, the Senate took the approach for the Board of Arts on a percentage basis and followed a distribution formula. So of the amounts appropriated, up to 78% would be to support Minnesota artists and arts organizations. This would be through a grant program. Up to 15% would be for arts education. Up to 5%.
May I interrupt here?
Yes.
When you said following the distribution formula, was that the formula that they're using at the present time?
Madam Chair,
this is that a new distribution formula?
I believe they may be currently using a distribution formula. However, in this distribution formula, that we're allowing up to 3% to go to administer these grant programs. So I don't know if that's how they're currently doing it, but it's possibly follows a bit of how they distribute right now.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Up to 5% would be in support of ethnic and cultural arts traditions. And then, as I mentioned, up to 3% would be to administer the grant programs and deliver technical services and provide fiscal oversight.
Madam Chair?
Representative Lilly.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but aren't we over 100%?
Madam Chair.
I'm not really good at math.
Yes, Representative, yes.
You know, we had about $300,000 or $300 million. What was 300% of requests? So I was
that is correct.
We tried to get it down to 100%. We didn't want to, but
as you can see there with the up to language,
okay,
it's not an exact number, and there was a little bit of a give them some flexibility. So they may not need that much for administration, but we gave them the flexibility to use that much.
Madam Chair, this is the creative section, so this is kind of creative accounting.
I'm all for that, sir.
Good. Let's go through as much as we can without interruptions, and then...
Sorry, Madam Chair.
When we're done with the walkthrough, then we'll get back to how we were doing this.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
We have to resist.
Okay. On the Senate, continuing, 30% then of the total appropriation for the grants, which is the first three sections I previously mentioned, is for should go to regional arts councils, and that percentage doesn't apply to the administrative costs. And then you'll see on the Senate side that we say this for several agencies, that these appropriations are added to the agency's base, and also that any unexpended balance is available in either year. And then we also have some standard reporting for all of the agencies. The reporting is the same throughout. This follows, I think, the way that we reported for the Clean Water Fund. And the reporting is pursuant to Statutes 3.195, and this is also similar. The first year reporting would be on March 1st, and then subsequent years would be on January 15th. And the direction for the reporting we gave was just to report according to the categories listed for the appropriations above. And then finally, this is also throughout the Senate side, the appropriation conditions that any grants encumbered before June 30th, 2011 are available until June 30th, 2013.
Madam Chair, I'm now on page R75 of the older version, Minnesota Historical Society. You'll note that on 56.34 of the House language, we have paragraph A, which puts in some boilerplate language about how the money should be spent, specifies that these are one-time appropriations, limits of administrative costs to 2.5%, requires a report to the legislature and governor. Paragraph B funds the Minnesota History Educational Network and includes specifications of what may be funded under that program. Paragraph C, moving over to page R76, funds statewide historic and cultural grants. The language also requires using established grant mechanisms and having assistance from an advisory committee, which is created herein. There's also a specific statement that the Preston Grain Elevator Restoration Project is eligible for grants under this section. Also eligible projects previously approved by the Minnesota Historical Society that have had their approved funding refused by a public board or governing body. That's on page 58, lines 26 through 32. You'll note that on page 58, lines 33 onward, there's a paragraph II. This establishes the Historic Resources Advisory Committee and specifies membership to that advisory committee. Continuing onward with the House language, we appropriate on paragraph III, three I's, a amount of money for materials and training assistance to local historical societies. Continuing onward, paragraph D appropriates collections funds on a one-time basis. Paragraph E funds the Minnesota Help Program. You'll see later in a later article there is statutory language for this program. Paragraph F funds on a competitive grant basis an analysis of historical programs in the state. Paragraph G funds an exhibit on regional, local, and cultural diversity of Minnesota's history and heritage that it requires a good faith fundraising effort.
Madam Chair,
please.
On the Senate side for the Minnesota Historical Society, again, we follow a distribution formula. The first portion is up to 45% for statewide history programs and projects. The second portion is up to 30% for a competitive grant program for projects through local, county, regional, other history organizations, or local units of government. Up to 25% for history programs that involve partnerships or collaboration with history or other organizations. And then again, with the Senate funny math, we have up to 3% to administer grant programs, deliver technical services, and provide fiscal oversight. And the director may again allocate the administrative cost between the programs.
Madam Chair,
Senator Cohen.
I know you didn't want to be interrupted, but I do need to point out that he's not here tonight, but this is Senator Tomasoni's section of the bill. next time you see him.
I will ask.
Fair enough.
Thank you. Madam Chair, also, the history center told us that the money would fluctuate for the administrative costs, and it actually goes down after the first year, so they needed some flexibility there as well. Again, this appropriation is added to the agency's base and is available in either year. And then we have our standard reporting the first year on the 1st of March and then the January 15th subsequent years, and that any contracts encumbered are available until June 30th, 2013. The next section on the Senate side, Section 5, line 5.50.29, this is to the Department of Administration for a number of programs. The money would flow through the Department of Administration and would go, excuse me just a second here. I'd have to go down. It goes to public television and public radio and AMPRS, but first of all, we go through just that this is added to the agency's base budget and is available in either year. The annual reporting and also that contracts are encumbered that are encumbered are available until June 30th, 2013. And I, if you want to continue on your side, and then I can go through the...
Madam Chair, I'm working on R80, and so we're going to bounce back and forth a little bit. Okay. But, Subdivision 4 on the House side funds a statewide survey of historical and archaeological sites and sets up an advisory panel with the State Archaeologist, Minnesota Historical Society, and the Board of Indian Affairs. Subdivision 5 on the page, bottom page, R81, House line 61.31 onward, is the equivalent program language that to the Senate, which occurred a page earlier, and it outlines grants and how the grants are divided to the Department of Administration and specific language for television and radio organizations, citing 129D.18. Now moving to R82, paragraph B, we continue onward with general language on the administration of these funds, limiting administration to 2.5%, specifying that all the funds are one-time appropriations. The House language allows a cultural grants advisory board to be established. If the board is established, there will be 7 members, including a member of representing public radio and television, one representing zoos, one representing Minnesota Center for the Humanities, and the last 4 appointed by the commissioner. And then there's some reporting requirements. Paragraph C is the appropriation language for public television. And I think that matches up with paragraph B on the Senate side.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That is correct. We... on the Senate side, we did add one sentence that would allow funding for public access cable stations for arts, art, history, and cultural programs.
Continuing on to page R83.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Jensen.
There is one difference on page R81 on my sheet. The House has 1% of appropriated funds for the administration of the programs. The Senate does not have that. We were relying on the associations for public TV and radio to do the oversight and the administration. So we do not apply a 1% for the Department of Administration.
Okay. Continuing onward, Madam Chair, I'm on page R83, paragraph D. The House language funds public television and radio documentaries, which would create documentaries on the uses of all 4 of the funds and make those open, accessible to the public. Paragraph E, which is on R83, we have the funding for Minnesota Public Radio and the funding for AMPRS. And I think there is also funding language on the Senate side right across from there. Continuing onward, R84, page 64, line 8 of the House language, we have money for the Minnesota Center of the Humanities to fund civics education programs for Kids Voting Minnesota, Learning Law, Democracy Foundation, and YMCA Youth and Government. Paragraph H of the House language is funding for the Children Museums, which lines up with 2 separate sections of the Senate.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That we have this on the Senate side, we have 2 separate appropriations, one for the Minnesota Children's Museum and a separate one for the Duluth Children's Museum. And within both of those, we have the standard reporting and contracts encumbered that they carry till June 30th, 2013.
Chairman?
Mr. Jensen.
After our bill became came through the committee and passed the floor, we found out that there's more than two children's museums in Minnesota. So perhaps the committee would consider making the money eligible on a, you know, an application basis. There's a children's museum down by Mankato is one of those that had contacted some of the members, and they would like a chance to apply for some of the money.
Madam Chair, continuing onward on page R85, we have paragraph I, which is the science museum appropriation, includes a match requirement and language that states that none of the funds may be used for normal operations or infrastructure. You'll see that in several places on our side. Lines up with the Senate provision, section 7 of the Senate. Continuing onward to R86. On R86 on the House side, you have paragraph J, which funds a Minnesota Digital Library project by the Minitex system to preserve, digitize, and share Minnesota images, documents, and historical materials. Paragraph K of the House language on R86 has two separate appropriation lines for the Minnesota Center for the Humanities. The first is just for programmatic development of the Minnesota Center for the Humanities. The second are for grant program for ethnic identities, celebrating ethnic identities of Minnesotans, requiring procedures that to be developed by the Center for the Humanities. That lines up with Section 4 on the Humanities Commission in the Senate.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We also have a line. We didn't specify amount of money, but we also on lines 50.9 to 50.11 that a portion of the amount is available for programs that support ethnic and cultural diversity in the state. I think that is supposed to kind of line up with the for organizations.
I think that lines up.
Okay. And then under the Humanities Commission, I also wanted to point out that Senate side has that these appropriations are added to the agency's base, and any expended balance is available in either year, and then just the reporting and et cetera.
Madam Chair, we're moving to page R87, paragraph L, funds Minnesota zoos, dividing 3/4 of the funds between the Minnesota Zoo, the Como Zoo, and the Duluth Zoo, allowing the last quarter to be apportioned through a competitive grants process or allocated by the commissioner only to zoos accredited by the Association of Zoos and Aquariums or demonstrating a plan working toward accreditation. That matches up with Section 12 of the Senate language.
Madam Chair, we on the Senate side have allocated money in the second year to the Minnesota Zoological Garden and with the same reporting and encumbering language.
Madam Chair, for a while now, it'll just be me on the House side all alone. paragraph M, we have grants to councils of color, four separate grants, one to each council of color for stated purposes. Paragraph N, we're on page R88, or House, page 66, line 21, we have appropriation of $50,000 to the Film and TV Board. This is for a grant to plan for future uses of a revolving loan fund or other financial mechanism to stabilize future film rebates and job creation. Also may be used for a film festival planning. Subdivision 6, it requires several organizations to consider and report to the legislature on possible uses of funds under this constitutional fund for the state capitol. Section 3, bottom of page R88, and continuing onward, subdivision 1 on the top of page R89 creates arts education programs. This is to be administered by the Department of Education, and these are for grants to school districts for materials, resources for teachers, students, and parents to promote achievement of K-12 academic standards in the arts. There's a limit on the amount for administration. I want to note specifically paragraph D on page 67, line 25. This is a subsidiary rider that diverts $150,000 for a census of public school-based arts education offerings. Subdivision 2 at the bottom of page R89 is the arts access provision, also to the Department of Education. This funds a grant program, and the operative language is on page R90, and you'll see a cap on administrative costs, a requirement that the grants are distributed equitably. The grants are for either clause 1 on page 68, line 13, for attendance fees and travel costs for youth to visit art museums, art performances, or arts activities, or clause 2, to bring artists to schools, libraries, community centers, or organizations for teaching, training, and performance purposes. There's a number of additional provisions there about statement of outcomes and not supplanting. Moving on to the bottom of page R90 and continuing R91, we have appropriations for libraries. These are allocated using existing formulas to the Minnesota's 12 regional library systems. The purpose is to provide educational opportunities in the arts, history, literary arts, and cultural heritage. These are all, as per all of the appropriations, one time on the House side. There's a 2.5% administrative cap. The funds may be used also either to sponsor programs or to provide grants to local arts and cultural heritage programs in partnership with the regional libraries. There's also language stating that these do not affect maintenance of effort requirements that affect libraries. Subdivision 4 has reporting language for these funds. Section 4 at the bottom of page R91 is the legislative appropriation that mirrors that of all the other articles on the House side. Section 5 is a set of appropriations for Indian language preservation. Part is for a working group on Dakota and Ojibwe language, which you'll see later in the bill. We have uncodified language on that. There are also a number of other grant programs here. And Section 6 appropriates for Dakota and Ojibwe immersion programs and states conditions for those. And there are somewhat similar language on the Senate side.
Yes, that's correct. Madam Chair, on the Senate side, starting with Section 10, line 54.18, Senate appropriates money to the Indian Affairs Council. And included within this is the Indian Language Preservation Program. And we do have language that matches up later on that Mr. McCormick mentioned. There's also, although it's not specifically mentioned, there is another program. And, Madam Chair, Mr. Jensen, can you help me with the allocations to the Indian Affairs Council other than the Indian Language Preservation Program?
Madam Chair, there was a request in, I believe, for an Indian burial grounds.
Yes.
Set that money aside in the base out of the $500,000. These are one-time appropriations.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Jensen. Then for the Indian Affairs Council, we have the standard reporting and contracts encumbered until June 30th, 2013. The next section on the Senate side is Section 6, starting with line 52.3. This is an appropriation to explore Minnesota tourism, and this is for a grant to the Minnesota Film and TV Board for grants to eligible film projects. And it goes on for a definition of eligible film project and needs to be written by a resident, directed, and set in Minnesota. There are a number of different ways that a project can qualify for reimbursement. And then we have standard the reporting and encumbrance language. The next section is Section 11 on the Senate side with line 55.3, and this is for an appropriation to the Purpich Center for Arts Education. And it states the purposes for the appropriation and then has the standard reporting and encumbrance language. And that concludes the article. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Doyle-Fontaine. We have a call of the House that we have to go to. We'll be back in five.
That means 25.
She said fully.
Oh, but many times they've done it faster.
Don't try to get done with that in 2 minutes.
I thought they could push each other. I forgot the other
meeting. Yeah, I forgot I was coming there.
Is that she? Oh.
Yeah. One for other things I got to do.
But I think they just now.
Stick one, two guys.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I got the washing problem.
Greg.
Boy, I desperately need a haircut. No, I ran home.
Greg, I hope so.
Did some Christmas shopping, made dinner. I threw some socks on. I didn't even look at them. Yeah, I do have some better pairs. I have my jeans on.
We get per diem tomorrow. So you
oh, thank God. More socks. But who has time to shop? Well, I don't. I swear, I need a haircut. I'm like 3 weeks behind for a haircut, too. I got to wait another week.
With the continuity you get on since our funding deal, I don't know how you survived.
I've not survived. And I went home with them. I mean, there's cupboards are bare. You know, my husband
said this.
He takes the kids to Little League practice, tries to get them to dinner, tries to get them to do their homework.
Mr. McCormick.
Madam Chair, Article 5. Section 1 of Article 5 on page R95 sets up a series of principles for spending legacy funds. This applies to the Outdoor Heritage Fund. If you continue on to page 96, you'll see that our Section 2 matches up with Section 1 in the Senate, and it contains some of the requirements for the website information that will go onto the website, and a variety of requirements, for example, that all 10 and 25-year plans and frameworks be placed on the website. One small note throughout this article on this House side, you're going to see requirements that each of the funds have a 10-year plan and a 25-year framework. There is Senate language.
And, Madam Chair, in the Senate language, Section 1, the legacy website, again, we just have the website requirement, and then that there's a condition of accepting that they have to provide information to the LCC that is necessary. I didn't see this on the House side. If you look at paragraph B on the Senate side, again, we have information that needs to be on the website. Then we also have each entity receiving an appropriation must provide the information to the LCC to put on the website. And that we also say that if there's another state entity that's linked, that they should be considered meeting the requirement as long as there's a link placed on the LCC website.
Madam Chair, continuing on to page R97, Section 3 on the House side, page 72 of the House, requires the creation of a legislative guide stating principles for use and expected outcomes of all funds. This is essentially a five-year guide for the years 2010 to 2015 and would be completed by House and Senate legislative committees by December 15th. Section 4, bottom of page R97, this is the language requiring restoration audits, requiring the legislative auditor to conduct restoration audits. This defines what a restoration audit is. We discussed this in terms of the funding language elsewhere in the bill. I'm going to continue onward to page R98, the Parks and Trails Fund. If you look at the House language, subdivision 2, this provision on expenditures and accountability, you'll see a variety of accountability standards that must be met for all projects funded and projects requested. There's a number of different examples. Biennially, they must be expected to balance the benefits across all regions. Information must be posted on the website, and a number of other display of signs, some provisions along those lines.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to point out that in each one of these, the House has display a sign on lands and capital improvements in paragraph F. As I mentioned earlier, the Senate has a general provision that says that that they must place a sign with a logo that's been selected at all access points and to any land and water resources as long as they receive money from the fund.
Madam Chair, at some point probably you'll want to instruct staff to go off and match up some provisions and make language recommendations where we think it's really technical, and some of these signage things will probably fall into that category. Madam Chair, on R98 you'll see matching up a metropolitan distribution formula from the House and the Senate. And
Madam Chair, I think except for paragraph B, I think it matches pretty well on the distribution formula. The big difference is in paragraph B on the Senate side. There's some specification on what the money is for.
Madam Chair, continuing then on the House side, you'll see subdivision 4, the bottom of page R99 on data availability. This requires that all data collected by projects funded with money from the Parks and Trails Fund that has value for planning and management of natural resources must conform to the enterprise information architecture developed by the Office of Enterprise Technology, and goes on to specify other aspects that the data must conform with. There's subdivision 5 at the bottom of page 99 is a specific requirement for special review. You'll see this for all of the funds in the House language. Any fund that receives an appropriation, in this case from the Parks and Trails Fund, totaling more than $10 million, must have meet special review requirements, including attorney general review and approval of all contracts, a second appraisal. We're now on to R100, the language related to the Outdoor Heritage Council in the House, the SART Outdoor Heritage Council in the Senate. These match up with only a few modest differences. The differences show up, actually, I think, on page R101. In the House side, we're looking at line 77.21. And what that states is that this is some of the language related to staffing expenses of the legislative auditor and the LCC, allowing up to 1% of the money, and it's slightly different on the Senate side.
Yeah, Madam Chair, on the Senate side, one difference is that in the House on 77.17 says that the LCC shall provide administrative support, and on the Senate side it has the council employing staff. This would be comparable to the LCCMR, where they would employ the staff and pay the expenses.
Madam Chair, we're now moving to R102. This is language on the House side only, relating to council recommendations, and we amend some of that language to require some that they'll achieve the outcomes of existing natural resources plans and make some technical changes. And then if you look down onward, we go down to paragraph F, paragraph G, paragraph H and I. Paragraph F allows the council to work with the Clean Water Council, the LCCMR, Board of Water and Soil Resources, MinSCU, University of Minnesota, in developing the council's recommendations. That's permissive language. Paragraph G requires the council to develop and implement a process that ensures citizens and potential recipients of funds are included throughout the process, including development and finalization of the council recommendations. Requires the process to be fair, equitable, thorough process, with a clear and easily understood method for ranking projects. R103 is where you'll find paragraph H. This also applies to the council, requiring that they use the regions of the state based upon the ecological regions and subregions developed by the DNR, establish objectives for each region and subregion to achieve the purposes of the funds outlined in the Constitution. Paragraph I on page 78 of the House requires the council to develop and submit to the LCC plans for the first 10 years of funding and a framework for 25 years of funding, and that allows them to use existing plans as applicable. This is, in shorthand form, the 10 and 25-year plan requirements that apply, and this would be to something that the Outdoor Heritage Council would develop. You're going to see 10 and 25-year plans for the other funds.
And, Madam Chair, I just wanted to clarify, though, that on the Senate side, you'll see language that's kind of broad. Senator Anderson worked on that would provide that would actually for each of the funds require a 25-year framework. So you don't see language lined up on the Senate side across from this, but they do have the duty, and we have actually a reporting requirement that they have to have it back before the next odd-yeared session.
Madam Chair, if you look at R103 Section 8, we delete existing language that allows the council to select an independent auditor and substitute that the legislative auditor shall audit the Outdoor Heritage Fund expenditures, including administrative and staffing expenditures. Section 9 on the House side is language about legislative oversight. The language differs between the two bodies. On the House side, once again, we allow the Senate and the House will receive reports from the Council on the Council from the legislative auditor, and then we strike an existing paragraph about outside review. The Senate has their own language.
Yeah, Madam Chair and members, the Senate basically carries the language on all the any changes to the Lasard Outdoor Heritage Council. The Senate has the language that was recommended by the Lasard Outdoor Heritage Council, and what it is just the minimal language to get to the point of where the administration would not be the Department of Natural Resources. Otherwise, since their bill came in very late, you know, late in the process, they had until April 1st, and we had policy committees that shut down by then. The Senate just carried the language that was recommended by the LOHC for making kind of the minimal amendments to this year and give us some more time to reflect before next year if there were any further changes to be made.
Madam Chair, some of the next two sections include language we discussed at this morning's meeting. Section 10 on priorities and expenditure requirements is House-only language specifying how the projects are to be prioritized and how the funds are to be expended. This carries over to R-104 and carries through Section 11, and which also has some of the language we discussed this morning. I'm not going to go through this again other than to continue on to page R-105 and finally point out the infamous paragraph F on page 81, line 21 and 22. These sections put a series of requirements on project selection and planning onto the Outdoor Heritage Council.
Madam Chair, could I just, before we leave that page, just point out one thing. On the House side in paragraph E, where you've got to the extent possible lands restored with money from the must-use vegetation only of Minnesota native ecotypes, that's similar to what's in the rider language on both sides, except it is a little tighter than what's in the rider language because it doesn't have the preferably of a local ecotype. So there is it's a little bit tighter language on paragraph E than what's in the rider that's carried on both sides.
I'm sure we're going to move on to page R-106, which continues some of the language that we've talked about and further specify some of the requirements for public accountability and acquisition of real property. This whole section needs to, be considered together. Section 12 is data availability language, similar to the language we talked about earlier for parks and trails funds. This applies to the Outdoor Heritage Fund, requiring the data to be made available within the enterprise information architecture. Moving onward to the bottom of page R-106, we're going to talk a little bit about the language here about a report to the governor and the Senate. I posted on the website from the Outdoor Heritage Fund. And also, a report must be made to the committees of the various House and Senate. It specifies what will be included in this report, including source of revenues collected and distributed by the council, description of assets and liabilities of the Outdoor Heritage Fund, and onward, gifts of values of gifts, a number of matters like that. Section 14 is also House-only language. This is a special review language for projects over $10 million. And this is the special review language for the Outdoor Heritage Fund, and we had similar for the Parks Fund. You'll see this again. It requires Attorney General review and approval. And in this case, the second appraisal is pertinent. Bottom of page 107, Section 15, you have language regarding the Clean Water Fund. And here we state the purpose, and I'm going to continue over to page R-108, where most of this language is. Purpose of the fund, where we list a series of purposes of the fund. Continuing onward to Subdivision 4 on expenditures and accountability. Similarly, we're stating a number of statutory provisions that projects must meet. Money must be expended to balance benefits across all states, various priorities and requirements for the Clean Water Fund. On page R-109, you'll see the data availability language. This is applying to the Clean Water Fund. On page R-109, Subdivision 6, you'll see this some special review language, and we've talked about that before. Section 16 at the bottom of page R109 is existing statutory language amended over on the top of page R110. Talking about the work program and semi-annual progress reports, and it stated that they must include a list of measurable outcomes and a plan for measuring and evaluating the results, lists of land acquired in fee title or through easements, and the entities that have to hold those. So that's an amendment to existing statute.
Yeah, and Madam Chair, Mr. McCormick, that's actually the LCCMR, or the Environmental Trust Fund. So it's actually a different fund than what's in the rest of this bill.
Madam Chair, you're right. Exactly. I misstated. Continuing on to R110, we have lined up some language regarding the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. The language is very different, however. On the House side, you're going to see carrying over to page R111, once again, expenditures and accountability language, special review language, in this case applying to the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, specifying standards that funds that are spent for that must meet. This lines up with the same intent and the same sort of language we've done to the other funds. This is very different than the Senate side language.
Thank you. Madam Chair, on the Senate side, Section 15, line 58.3, we actually on the Senate moved the section that establishes the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund to a new chapter. The Chapter 129D is actually an arts assistance chapter, and I think the thought was, since this is arts and cultural heritage, that we would just put it into a new chapter, so it's 129E. That's why all the language is underlined, because it would be a new section in law. This in the Senate side, we appropriate annually following formula: 50% would each year would go to the Board of Arts, and at least 25% to the Minnesota Historical Society. And then we also include at line 58.13 an acknowledgement, which is similar to some language over on the House side 87.18. And this just says that that anyone who receives money from the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund needs to include credit to the legacy amendment that was passed by the voters.
Madam Chair, then we're going to move on to R-112, where there's a repealer on the Senate side, repealing, I think, just the simple statement in 129D.17 of the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. That's why I think that would be technical. Section 18 on the House side appropriates from the Parks and Trails Fund to the Commission of the DNR for a collaborative project to develop a 25-year framework, and specifies a number of conditions upon that framework, and it matches up with some sections in the Senate side.
Yeah, and Madam Chair, I think the key here is they're doing a little bit different things, although kind of similar. I mean, the Parks and Trails framework on the House side is done by the Commissioner of Natural Resources as a collaborative project with other entities. On the Senate side, it's money to the University of Minnesota Center for Changing Landscapes to kind of look at the broad, what the system needs statewide for all park systems. So they are a little bit different, although I did some discussions with Senator Torres-Ray and with staff from the Department of Natural Resources that could be combined into kind of doing a framework on both levels. But they are doing them on a little different level in each part, in the House and Senate. Even though there's language for a 25-year framework, the Senate is focused on kind of the broader park needs in the state, throughout the state.
Madam Chair.
Representative Guinness.
I think just a little clarification is in order here. I think you said that the DNR was in charge. It's not actually a DNR in charge. It's a collaborative process. The DNR is the host. They'll do the staffing and that kind of thing, but it's a collaborative process.
Madam Chair, you'll see that in most of the framework development, we're attempting to set up collaborative processes, so there might be one or more point agencies, but then we specify a number of people who are involved in creating the plan. And in this case, it's listed on, I think, lines 88.3 onward. Moving on to page R113, 113, we have house-only language, and this is the Arts and Cultural Heritage Framework requirement. Paragraph A requires a joint subcommittee of the House and Senate committees with jurisdictions over arts and cultural heritage to conduct public meetings, to gather public stakeholder input, and provide recommendations to their various bodies. Earlier, we talked about the creation of a legislative guide, and I think that the intention on the House was probably to merge these two processes. And additionally, the joint subcommittee would select representatives to participate in the collaborative project, which is created under paragraph B for arts and cultural heritage. And in paragraph B, then, we have the framework language, which would fund and establish a collaborative project to create planning for the arts. There's a list of specified programs beginning on line 89.10 and following in sequence. There are also public members that are not connected to specific organizations. The collaboration will result in a 10-year plan and a 25-year framework. There's permissive language allowing outside contractors or the University of Minnesota to work on this project. The language continues on to page R114 and specifies what the collaboration shall achieve and requires both a preliminary and a final report. Section 20 at the bottom of page R114 on the House side establishes a comprehensive statewide sustainable water resources detailed framework. This is something that is tasked to the University of Minnesota and requires a number of implementation schedules, associated benchmarks, some statement of ecological benefits, and conditions placed upon it. There is a cooperation section, which you'll find on paragraph B, which continues on to the next page. So it's developed by the University of Minnesota Water Resources Center in cooperation with federal, state, local, and private nonprofits with expertise. Paragraph C requires also a 10-year plan for sustainable water resources. And paragraph D requires submission of the detailed framework to the legislature. And paragraph E states conditions of acceptance, including work plans, timelines, budgets, progress reports, and submission to legislative committees and the LCC. There is language on the Senate side.
Yeah, Madam Chair, we actually saw this language earlier. This is also just brought down. This is from the Article 2 on the clean water part of the bill. And what it does is it does something similar things to what the House is doing. One of the big differences here, though, is that it, we specify that it's in cooperation with staff from the Environmental Quality Board, since they are by statute the planner for water in the state, the overall planner for water, and so it does include them in the language. But you'll see there's additional language in the appropriation that's not reflected here.
Next provision is a Senate provision.
Madam Chair, I mentioned this earlier. We were talking about strategic plans. You can see that this applies to all of the outdoor funds, and it does require a 25-year strategic plan, basically for the legislative committees, divisions, councils that are responsible for making recommendations, that they should develop a 25-year plan with broad public input. So it's kind of an overall, and including language from the Constitution and the types of things that that each of them are supposed to do, including applicable outcomes for restoring, protecting, enhancing the wetlands, prairies, forests, habitats for fish, game, lakes, rivers, streams, groundwater, and supporting parks and trails. And it has to be updated on a regular basis, no longer than every 5 years. And the website must include a link to any of the plans that are developed, the strategic plans that are developed. And then it also specifies that the ecological sections and subsections established by the Department of Natural Resources to be based on sound science and achieve benefits across all ecological sections within the state.
Madam Chair, the last provision on the House side is on page R116, Section 21, limits on appropriations. This is language which I think restates language which is carried throughout the rest of the House article. It essentially says that all appropriations on the House bill in all four funds is are one time only for this biennium, will not carry past 2011 unless otherwise stated, and none of our appropriations will be part of a budget base. Requires the legislature to begin anew with considerations.
And Madam Chair, Article 6 contains some provisions from House File 1673 carried by Representative Wagenius, and you'll see later on in this article these provisions wouldn't apply to any of the appropriations in this act, but they would apply going forward. The first section, the conservation easement purpose statement, would require conservation easements purchased with state funds after July 1st, 2009 to have a statement of the conservation purpose. Then the next section would establish a long-term land management account, and this account would receive contributions from organizations and people who use state funds appropriated after July 1, that they'd either have to contribute 10,000 or 5% of the appraised value of the land that's being protected by the conservation easement, and this would apply to either people who hold the conservation easement or who purchase one and then transfer it to the state. There are some exemptions for organizations that can demonstrate that they are able to provide long-term management on their own. For example, if they had a fund already established that they were maintaining to cover the cost of long-term management. On page R118, paragraph E just states that nothing in this section prohibits a holder of an easement from accepting gifts or other funds to meet this requirement. And it also, paragraph F, would define what appraised value is for purposes of determining that the 5% amount. Paragraph G says that for conservation easements acquired under chapters 103B to 103H, this would be primarily those by Bowser, or when federal funds are used, that they would the contribution would be determined based on some current provisions that Bowser is using already. Subdivision 3 is the exemptions that I had mentioned earlier. And then subdivision 4 on R119 states that the money can't be expended until July 1, 2017, and it requires that this the money be used for long-term land management and monitoring enforcement of conservation easements. Section 3 is...
Chair, before we move on, can I just get a clarification from the House on the language on that? In this,
Mr. Knopf.
In this section, there's a number of places where it talks about with state funds appropriated on or after July 1, 2009. Does that mean 2010 legislative appropriations?
Yes.
Or if there was a special session after July 1 of 2009 or something like that. So
what it line? Would,
well, the best place to look at it is on Section 1 from Article 6. 91.26 to 91.27, it says that a conservation easement purchased in whole or in part with state funds appropriated on or after July 1, 2009. And the way I would read that is that it would have to be appropriated, enacted after that date. But it's a little bit unclear as to whether you mean money that's appropriated in fiscal year 10 or appropriated after that date. But I would read it appropriated after that date, even though the appropriation may not be effective until July 1. It's still appropriated before that date. I just wasn't sure what the intent was there.
Well, originally as drafted, it would apply to fiscal year 2010. There is an exemption for the appropriations in this particular act later on.
Madam Chair, I would read that as not applying to the fiscal year 10 appropriations, but or not even the 11 if they were appropriated in this session. But it's a little bit of difference. Will you read it?
Moving on, on page R119, section 3 is a technical provision related to the following section that says that just lands that receive the one-time payment in the next section are not eligible for some supplemental PILT payments. Section 4 is the a new section that would sort of a payment in lieu of PILT payment or a host fee. The subdivision 1 establishes a requirement that a one-time payment be made for acquired natural resources lands that would normally be eligible for PILT that are purchased from the Outdoor Heritage Funds to receive a one-time payment, and the one-time payment would be equal to 25% of the appraised value of that.
Madam Chair, excuse me, but I just want to point out, on 94.32, it says on or after July 1, 2010, and it depends on your interpretation of what that means. And the way I would read that is that the appropriations in 2010 by the legislature, this wouldn't apply to those, but I don't know if that was the House's intent.
Ms. Taylor.
Again, it'd be the same intent as the original, just a year out, because these would not apply to the appropriations in this. And we adjusted the date because these would only be Outdoor Heritage Funds, and we assume that all the Outdoor Heritage Fund appropriations would be contained in this act. The paragraph B on R120 just sets up the payment to be along with the existing PILT payment, and just tells the commissioner to determine the payment and certify the amount. This is similar to what they do for the PILT payments. Paragraph C is just restating that land that does receive a one-time payment under this section would not be eligible for traditional PILT payments. Subdivision 2 establishes the process for determining appraised value. This is, again, similar to the existing PILT payments, except there's a provision that if the estimated market value is less than $100,000, that they wouldn't require an appraisal. Subdivision 3 establishes the technical transfer to the Department of Revenue to make the payments. Subdivision 4 outlines how the funds would be used. excuse me. Paragraph A would require that the upon receipt of the payment, the county would need to give townships the equivalent of their what they would receive under the traditional PILT payments up front. And then paragraph B would states that the remaining money would be dispersed according to the traditional disbursements under the PILT payments. And section 5 establishes the effective dates that I mentioned previously. It does also provide an extension for those. It'd be the conservation easements executed by Bowser. And then Article 7, the section 1 states the application and the following sections 2, 3, and 4, which establish definitions for enhance, protect, and restore to be used when interpreting either appropriation language or other language related to the Clean Water, Parks and Trails, and Outdoor Heritage Fund. And you'll see some Senate language on the opposite side, and I think this is pulled from the Agricultural Finance Omnibus, and it's just, I believe it's here because it's pointing out that Section 84.02, which is where these definitions would be codified, is was proposed to be repealed on the Senate side in that bill.
Madam Chair, I'm going to continue onward with I'm on the bottom of page 121, Section 5 of the House, Section 13 of the Senate. This is the public television and radio cultural and heritage production and acquisition grants. There are some differences throughout in terms of how we apply things. For example, on line 97.1, The House language includes, in addition to the Minnesota Public Television Association, we include the Association of Minnesota Public Education and Radio Stations. And you'll see that that similar inclusion happens on 97.6, 97.16. So those are different from how the Senate structures by adding that. In addition, you'll see at the bottom of page, I believe it's R-122, there are reporting languages, and the differences here are that we have a reporting date in the House of annually by August 1, and in the Senate it's annually by January 15. The Senate includes language that would require the report to go to ranking minority members of the Senate and House committees. You'll see that again on the Senate side and other places. I think those are the differences in that section. The next section is the Senate section.
Madam Chair, what Mr. McCormick said is true, and on the Senate side, what we did was we had two separate sections. One was for the public television, cultural and heritage production and acquisition grants, and then a separate section for the non-commercial radio, cultural and heritage production and acquisition grants. And it might make some sense if it's not a problem with anyone from either of those organizations to combine it up as like the House did. And so we can see if there's any objection to that. And then with regard to the reporting dates, the January 15th is just a suggestion that Senator Betzold always offers, so that's why that was changed, and also the ranking minority members' suggestion. So those are the differences there.
Madam Chair, at the bottom of page R-123, you have the statutory language for the History Education Learning Program, the HELP program. This received funds earlier in the bill. This is Representative Hansen's bill. The language continues on to R-124. On R-124, we have language for the Volunteer Working Group on Dakota and Ojibwe Language Revitalization and Preservation. I think the language matches up except for, moving on to page R-125, lines 99.789 and 10. In the House, we appoint one member of the Senate and one member of the House. And I think that is different than how that those are not appointed in the Senate language.
Madam Chair, those lines were taken out in Finance Committee the other day because Senator Betzold brought up that had those lines stayed in, it would have made the bill go to the Rules and State and Local Government. So we took those out in committee the other day. So,
Madam Chair, continuing on to page R-126, there's a couple of Senate provisions that are not in the House, sub 4.
I believe this, Madam Chair, I believe this was also taken out in Finance the other day. I don't remember the exact reasoning, but I believe that's where it was removed. Wait. You must have removed it somewhere then.
We must have. Madam Chair, I'm not sure we ever had the language, but we may have removed it along the way.
I don't, Madam Chair, I don't believe we added it the other day, so.
We can track that down for
okay.
you, Madam Chair. That ends the languages in Article 7, and you've already done invasive species in Article 8. So I think that concludes our walkthrough.
Thank you. Representative Wagenius.
Yes, will the Senate be giving us a list of all the statutes they are repealing in their repealer sections?
Madam Chair, yeah, well, we can provide that. Mr. Elfontaine, maybe you can put that together for tomorrow.
Chair Representative Wagenius.
Mr. Knopf.
When you see the repealer in there, that's the repealer that was in the Ag Bill. A number of those, all the rest of the sections have been repealed. But the reviser lined that up because the House was amending 8402, and it was a Senate position to repeal 8402. That's the only reason it's there. Those repealers are not contained in the Senate bill. But it was just lining up a Senate position. with a House position.
So, Madam Chair, for example, if we decided not to mess with the Senate repealer of 8402, then we would take these and we all wanted these definitions, we would take them and put them in a different chapter of law, and that would allow it to be clear.
And that's why the same repealer was in three times?
Madam Chair, yes, it was just the reviser did that to line it up with the House additional provisions, adding things to 8402. And apparently they did that because the Senate had a position earlier in session. It's not been enacted, but it was a Senate position. The Senate passed a bill that had a repealer of 84.02. It's a kind of a moot point at this point because the ag bill is already on its way to the governor, and it doesn't contain the repealer of 8402, but it was a Senate position.
Representative Guinness.
I'm glad to hear it isn't the Senate position in this bill, since that, if I recall correctly, that's the definition of native prairie. And since we are working to restore native prairie, instead of, would be ashamed to lose its definition.
Is there any questions about, does any of the senators or the representatives have any questions about anything that was pointed out in the walkthrough? Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair, I just had a question of the process with the Senate on one of the provisions, the Mississippi River Corridor area, because I think in the House we went through about five committees, and the bill was amended a number of times, and just wondering how many committees did that go through in the Senate, and that was introduced as a bill, and it was heard in multiple committees and has made it into the bill, and we have side-by-sides here where pretty similar language, but just was wondering how many, because I think it was maybe five in the House.
Madam Chair,
Senator Anderson.
Senator Sieben was the author of that bill, so I can't tell you for sure. I believe it was heard in the environment policy, and I know it was heard in the environment finance division, and I think it probably went to state and local government. So that's my guess. We'd have to check.
That went through a lot of committees.
So, Madam Chair,
Representative Hansen,
your subcommittee heard it separately,
we heard it
as
too.
Well, and amended it. So,
it'd be fair to say it's been through both houses and multiple committees. Had a lot of testimony. It's been amended and changed. I mean, we had a change again on the House floor. So, those positions are pretty solid, I would think, if they've been through multiple committees in both houses.
Senator Anderson.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, it passed with a very strong vote on the Senate floor, but there certainly was
conversation.
A lot of wide variety of views about the bill expressed throughout the whole process.
Did the voices that were expressing the views get lighter and happier by the time it got to the floor?
I just think they got fewer and fewer votes by the time it got to the floor.
I mean, the voices that were expressed, or the people that were expressing their opinion, were fewer or less loud.
Madam Chair, we didn't have a debate about it on the floor of the Senate.
Okay.
I think after it passed the committees where we took testimony, there was not a great deal of discussion after that.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Morgan.
Madam Chair, I noticed a few places in Article 4, I shouldn't say our Article 4, but the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, where the Senate had appropriations being added to the agency's base budget. And whereas we had some language specifically noting that if these were one-time appropriations, these will be reconsidered again in 2011. And I was just wondering if the Senate could share some thoughts that went into that process and as we move forward. I know Senator Tomasoni's not here.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, let me take a stab at that in his absence. I think what Senator Tomasoni intended was to, because it's not throughout the article. I think it's in, what, several places, I believe.
Right. Three or four.
And in those instances, had hoped that it could be considered as part of base funding because of, I think he felt, and I'm going to see if Mr. Jensen can help me a little bit, because he felt that these were programs that would be appropriate for base level funding, that what was contemplated in terms of programming was ongoing programming. It was not a one-time kind of program. I think that was his distinction.
And then how do we decide what is supplanting and what is supplementing?
Well, Madam Chair, I don't know how much discussion you had.
Lots.
On the House side relative to that. We had a fair amount of discussion, and I don't know if there was any resolution on our part as to what this definition of supplant versus supplement versus add more money to the budget actually is. And we never were really able to, and I worked with Mr. Watson on this, and I don't think we had any explicit answers. So in terms of what a constitutional definition would be in that regard. So it's not that we ignored it, but we couldn't determine what letter of the law we should actually follow relative to that. Maybe I don't know. I'm looking at Mr. Watson isn't here. I'm looking at Mr. Shepherd in the corner. Maybe he's in a better position to offer some advice to your committee relative to that.
Madam Chair,
he did offer advice, and he authored a research paper for us, and we had several hours of conversation about it. Mr. Jensen?
Madam Chair and members, one of the things we discussed was using the experience and knowledge of the agencies and the people in those agencies, because they would be working with people who had not received this type of funding before. They wouldn't know for sure how to apply for the grants. So we were using that framework of the agencies to assist us with deciding who gets the money and was it supplanting or supplementing. So, we were using their experience to help us.
Senator Anderson.
Well, Madam Chair, I just wanted to mention that in our division, we discussed the issue quite a bit of supplanting, especially in the water allocations, because it was a lot clearer to me in many cases in our division. So we were we didn't have a legal definition we were using, but we tried to be careful and intentional about how we dealt with that issue in this bill and in our budget bill as well.
Right. And that gets back to what Representative Morgan, I think, was asking is, and I know Representative Reginius in a couple cases in the bill that passed environmental finance in her committee, she funded some money up front so that our recommendation for the legacy money could be funded in addition to, so we weren't supplanting in our recommendations that's in this bill. And Representative Wiginius.
Madam Chair, I have become concerned anew about this issue when we understand now that the governor will be unallotting. And so I look at some of the things that we did where I felt comfortable that we were not supplanting under pretty normal definitions. And I don't know how we handle the situation when we don't know what may be allotted in some of these areas.
Sam Cohen, you're finance chair in the Senate, then do you have any concerns along those lines? Because
I'm not sure. I have to think this through. I'm not sure, Madam Chair, that I share Representative Wagenius's concern to the extent that if the governor is in the process of signing all the budget bills today and making line item vetoes in those bills, then he's done with the bills. This money is constitutionally dedicated, so he could certainly line item veto something within this bill, I believe, but obviously it can't be used for unallotment purposes. It would simply go to the bottom line within these funds.
Representative Wagenius.
That's not actually my concern. Okay. My concern is, say, in the heritage area, we were careful, the habitat area, we worked hard to make sure that the parks, where we did cuts, we certainly didn't cut more than the average. But if the governor goes back now and beyond goes back and unallots, then we've gone beyond. See, if there was another cut to parks and trails, I would feel we would be in a position.
Okay. I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Right, now I understand. Let me suggest this, and maybe at this hour we're not going to get into a lengthy discussion. I do think we have to be a little bit careful to the extent we've got about 2 days to put this bill together. And so we don't have a lot of time. We have a lot of work to do. Possibly tomorrow we should have a limited conversation, and maybe we can utilize Mr. Shepard's work, and maybe I'm going to suggest maybe Ms. Doyle Fontaine is comfortable, but otherwise, we just said we can't bring in Mr. Watson, can we? He's attending his son's graduation until Saturday morning.
That's no excuse.
Well, last weekend I went to Colorado for my nephew's graduation, so I can't be critical. But so I've realized he's not available until I think Saturday because he is out of town for his son's graduation. But possibly from Senate Counsel, we could have somebody in concert with Mr. Shepard for a few minutes tomorrow to maybe offer us some direction relative to what Virginia suggests.
And in light of what Representative Morgan asked, then, because the money is part of their base, the governor was recommending that there not be a base. It worries me. That part worries me.
I hadn't followed Representative Wagenius initially, but now understanding the concern. Because, sure, the governor says, take whatever the appropriation is throughout this bill, the appropriations are, and hypothetically, Representative Gaines, you're suggesting then come July 1st, he unallots $10 million from this account, and now, in effect, have we supplanted what we're doing here. So that puts it in a different light. So.
Senator Fredrickson.
Well, Madam Chair, seemed to me a couple facts that I'm thinking about. Number one, we can't control what the governor is going to do. Fact number two, he's already signed the Environment and Natural Resource Bill, so we know that. And it would seem to me to be the responsibility of the governor, if he does on a lot in this area, it would be his responsibility to make sure that he would not on a lot so that we would not be supplanting. Hmm. And if he would, it would seem to me somebody might have an action to take him to court and say you can't do that.
But then that leads me to the next step of not having anything to do with on allotment. But I believe I read what Representative Morgan read, that it was for the 25 years. It would be part of the baseline for the 25 years. So does that mean then when governors, whoever they may be, make their recommendations, then that they make the recommendations from beyond? Like if this year there was $100 million for the next appropriation that the governor was going to make recommendations on was $100 million, and that became the base. Then would that go to $200 million the following biennium, and then $400 million the following? Does it compound? Does it multiply? Does it for the base, which is for the ordinary operation of the office? Of the, or are we not understanding what base means?
Well, Madam Chair, I think you're
excuse me, just a minute. Representative Davids.
Madam Chair, do we need a motion to go back at night, or are we going to do that? How
does that work? We do need a motion.
So move.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. We won't be much longer. But. Go on, Senator.
Well, Madam Chair, this discussion, and you obviously wrestled with this a little bit more than we have in terms of the totality of this bill. It's fairly unique. And we all knew going in with the discussion with the constitutional amendment over the last several years, we knew we were going to be facing this. I'm not sure we're going to be able to totally resolve this in the context of this conference committee because of this being of some original nature. So that's why I suggest maybe having a little bit of a discussion tomorrow to offer some guidelines. And so as we proceed over these next couple of days, without suggesting what we will do or not do, probably err on the side of caution in regard to some of this. But you know, we're not going to, unless we want to bring in a few people from the U Law School or something.
Madam Chair,
Representative Davids.
I've been thinking about this quite a bit, and I don't know how you can actually put anything in a base at all, because then if it's in the base, then you're in the base for 25 years. You can't cut it back.
That's right.
This has to be looked at every year.
Mr. Jensen, are we on the right track or on the wrong track about the base? Were you there when the discussion took place?
Madam Chair, can you help? Members, I think you're on two tracks. One in the base and one not in the base. It could be for 25 years if it's in the base, or you can still review it every year, whether it's in the base or not. It is just an appropriation,
they
not
cut it back, it's in the base.
Constitutionally dedicated to the base.
So the percentage would be the same, unless the legislature changed it, the same percentage for the next 25 years for both the arts money and the history money. Was that the idea, just to give the insurance?
Madam Chair, that was the idea to establish the programs. But, of course, the legislature can change that every year. The percentage could be changed every year.
Yeah, Madam Chair, it's statutory. It's not constitutional.
Representative Morgan.
Well, I guess that begs the question, why put it in the base then? If we're agreed that we should be reassessing this every year or every 2 years, why are we putting it into the base? And I guess that's what I don't understand, particularly in light of the supplement versus substitute language in the Constitution. So, but I think Senator Cohen's right. We're probably going to have to continue thinking about this and probably talking about this as we consider what to do.
For a few minutes. Again, yeah. If this was a week ago, we could spend an evening having a very interesting discussion. Unfortunately, I don't think time will lend itself to maybe as detailed a discussion as we might want to have.
It was just a week ago. Tomorrow, at night when we passed the bill in the House, mm-hmm. and then your bill came soon after. So we were pretty much on the same timeline for that, but and I understand the few minutes part. Jen, I had some philosophy. Are there any philosophies that you want to share with us about the exercises you went through to adopt the Senate position?
I'm not sure I might defer to Senator Anderson in that regard. To the extent that most of the action was in her division, which I don't serve on, so.
We didn't have time to develop a philosophy, Madam Chair. We just tried to put together a balanced bill. I don't say that facetiously. We talked a lot about what this meant and how important it was, but I did see that you had a set of principles that your committee put together, and I thought that was, we passed that out and thought that was very useful information, but we didn't spend a lot of time on that. We just talked about how to put together a good balanced bill.
Did you look at the money as different than other money, like LCMR money or appropriation finance committee appropriation money, or Senator Romo?
I can just speak for the water, but there were a couple of things that were guiding us. Make the best use of money, especially if you can duplicate, if you can get matching money, that there'd be civic engagement and collaborations and partnerships. I have a whole list of those that kind of were a checklist for myself. And one of the things that was really critical for us was to make it understandable to the public, because we felt we had a public trust. And so that's why we organized it differently. We organized it according to functions rather than agency allocation, so that the public would understand what we're promising to do and that we could track it better in terms of reporting out. So I don't know if that qualifies as philosophy, but there were guiding principles in what we did.
Right. And that's and one of the reasons we went with the agencies was because that's what the governor did, and he made the first recommendations on the legacy money, which we were a bit surprised at first, but then we took it seriously.
Madam Chair, maybe. I'm sorry, Senator Fredrickson.
Madam Chair, I was just going to talk a little bit about the water, too, as Senator Rummel did. At least from my perspective in the discussion I pursued was I thought with that monies we should be attempting to fund the Clean Water Legacy Act and bring us into compliance with the 1972 Federal Clean Water Act. That should be the main focus of what we use these monies for, because a few years ago when we were passing the Clean Water Legacy Act, we knew it was going to take from $80 to $100 million a year to bring us into compliance with that federal act. And this seemed to be like a really good fit for accomplishing that, realizing, of course, that there are additional uses even in the constitutional amendment for, like, clean drinking water. So that's kind of what I looked at as we looked at what we're going to do with the monies.
Senator?
Well, Madam Chair, maybe I could take a stab at that. I'll go back a few years. I'll go back to 2005, 2006. The people primarily involved in the Senate in the passage of the constitutional amendment in 2005 to the Senate floor, in 2006 off the Senate floor, were principally the author Dallas Sams. Senator Fredrickson was heavily involved, myself. And I won't speak for Senator Fredrickson, and I obviously can't speak for Dallas. But I think the intent was to enhance, protect, preserve Minnesota's quality of life in special and unique areas. the methodology of arriving at that was less important than at preservation. So if we were looking at existing programs, if what was contemplated then was existing programs, that was fine. If what was contemplated was new programs, that was fine. The question was, what would enhance these areas of life? Habitat preservation, conservation, clean water preservation, arts and cultural resources. And it struck us during those couple of years that it wasn't kind of one size fits all, to the extent that what would work in, say, regard to habitat preservation was going to be the same necessarily with clean water. And certainly, as we worked on this over those couple of years, going into 2007, the nature of the legislation changed. For instance, on the conservation end of it, that was contemplated, but it was a smaller part of it. Well, as this thing progressed from 2005 to 2006 to 2007, it was clear that the need and the significance of, say, clean water legacy probably took on a higher level in contrast to other parts of the legislation. So some of that changed, but I don't think there was, I don't think we ever looked at it as, again, kind of one size fits all in terms of how we would deliver the enhancement preservation of those quality of life kinds of issues. If that makes some sense.
Senator Saxhawk.
It's late, Madam Chair. Thank you. Well, of course, there's, in terms of philosophy, there's much ballyhooed difference in the Lessard Outdoor Heritage Council and the Outdoor Heritage Council on the House side. And our tendency, I guess, was to accept the recommendations of that council with what we saw as some excellent work. And I think our attitude, to some extent, or our philosophy, is that we need to look at the first year of work, and if there's some problems, then deal with them at that particular time. And the House has taken a little different tact, which is fine too, is kind of anticipating problems that might come up. So I think that, you know, that's a little bit how we're seeing this, and I'm sure we'll talk about it in the next couple of days.
I bet we will, but I don't think we should jump to conclusions on what the House position was, especially when the House funded all of the recommendations.
Madam Chair, I would apologize if I'm wrongly interpreting what happened. I think I'm pretty close on what we did.
What you did, yes, Senator. And we'll be talking. Senator Anderson.
Madam Chair, just one more point, and it follows up on what Senator Saxhawk said about, I think we did talk a lot about the need to do long-term planning for all of these funds to make sure that we had a 25-year idea of what we thought the voters intended and what we expected to get by the end of those 25 years. What would Minnesota look like by the end of that time? And we realized, as Senator Saxhawk said, we didn't know all the answers yet, and so we wanted to put in place a process to try to do some thoughtful planning, and that this year's bill would set that in motion and do some of the things we know are important without carving things in stone. You know, in our parks recommendation, we didn't put any percentages in law or criteria for some of the newer program on the regional parks, and we thought we needed to have more public input, more discussion, and a more thoughtful approach. But we just didn't have time to go through all of that for any of the funds in this timeline. So that's more of a long-term process that will help guide us in the future.
Senator.
Well, and Madam Chair, maybe getting away a little bit from the esoteric, let me just offer some examples that have occurred to me in terms of differences. Let's take the Clean Water Legacy. We didn't reinvent Bowser. And I'm not suggesting the House did this. I'm just saying in terms of offering maybe an elaboration of what I suggested. Well, we've had some very good programs in place in terms of clean water programs. So, and Senator Anderson, Senator Rummel can speak to this better than I can, but the intent was not necessarily to reinvent the wheel relative to programs and agencies that have worked pretty well. Another example, there are appropriations, and Senator Torres Ray is not here, but there are appropriations for, and I think they're pretty similar between the House and the Senate in terms of parks. Well, if we talk about the appropriation to the Met Council for metropolitan parks, I was a couple weeks ago at Lake Nokomis in Minneapolis, and I'm not looking to have the Met Council reinvent the chain of Minneapolis lakes. That's a very unique, I think that's as nice a residential kind of setting as you'll find anywhere in the country in terms of an urban setting. And I'm not looking to reinvent the Minneapolis chain of lakes. By contrast, I don't think the legislature has ever been involved before, and maybe somebody can correct me if I'm mistaken, with Indian cultural heritage programs in the way that both the House and the Senate specify. You know, that's unique in terms of being something that we have not really done before. So in that instance, you're looking at the establishment of something new that's not been attempted. Now, 2 years from now, when we've had a chance to see that, if we assume that's an appropriation made during the course of this conference committee, when we look at this 2 years down the road, do we say, well, we did exactly the right thing, and now we continue that program as was established? Or do we look at it and say, look, we did everything we need, we really don't need that appropriation anymore, or we need to do it in some kind of different way? That's something new that we really haven't done before. So maybe that offers, it's kind of maybe an elementary explanation, but
very helpful, though.
Maybe some thoughts on kind of the mixture of how we look at it. Certainly on the Senate side, there's at least with me, a touch of melancholy to the extent that, obviously, if we go back on the Senate side, former Senator Lessard, of course, was the author of the original habitat legislation, the first go-around of the constitutional proposal. But for the 2 years in 2005-2006, it was Dallas. And, I wish he was here, obviously, to speak. I mean, if he was still in the Senate, if he's still with us, he'd be in this position, not myself. And so when I try to speak for him, I'm not sure I do it correctly, but I think those are some of the thoughts we had. And I don't know if Senator Frederickson would agree with that, because he was involved in quite a bit of that as well, in terms of how we looked at it going back 3 and 4 years ago.
Senator Anderson.
Madam Chair, I can keep coming up with more ideas as long as, but yeah, I'll try to make, this will be my last one. I think one other thing that was important to us in our putting this whole bill together was really to avoid having this be sort of a free-for-all of every legislator bringing their favorite little project forward. It was very important for us to try to do broad categories of funding and set up a process, and oftentimes to use an existing process to do that, to make sure that things were spread evenly around the state and appropriately around the state to where the best projects were and the best ideas are. So we really, you will see very few individual projects in any of this bill on the Senate side. And I think that's an area where we're very different, and it's getting, that yours is more broken down into more smaller pieces, and that will be a little bit of a challenge for us to reconcile.
Senator Saxhog.
Yeah, and I have one quick thing, and I don't talk much usually anyway, but I, the one thing that we talked a little bit about in most of these meetings were what we called projects of significance, and it had a more practical application, and that's when I go home, particularly after a difficult session, as this will be, And people ask me, what'd you do with that amendment money? I'd like to be able to have four or five things that I can reel off, you know, whether we're talking about the 200,000 acre forest or a good website for the parks or whatever we are. Some things that I can quickly tell people and they'll be impressed that we haven't just been frittering away our time. So that's a little bit of, I think, the philosophy that we tried to weave through this, too.
Senator Cohen.
Okay, let's see if I can make this my last comment, because Senator Saxhawk said he doesn't talk a lot, and maybe I'm going on a little bit too much. The other thing I think we did on the Senate side, and I think the House obviously did it as well, but maybe we come at it from a different perspective, is to try to have some sense of what people were voting on in November. Now, you know, having said that, what was it, 1.656 million people? So can the 10 of us in this conference committee and our ad hoc conferees, can we speak in detail about what those 1.656 million people thought? No, of course not. But I think we tried to have a sense of what took place in the translation from legislative action over these last 3 or 4 years to a ballot campaign to what the voters might have thought they were voting on. Now, let's be honest among friends in this room. There's no question that the political driver for the ballot question was clean water. And we know full well it was polled. We know full well that there was an emphasis on that. So of those 1.656 million people who voted for the amendment based on clean water, you know, have we tried to keep faith with them? But obviously, there were lots of people who voted in regard to habitat preservation, lots of people who voted in terms of historic cultural arts preservation, and so on. So what did those kinds of, what did those groupings of people think they were getting from the amendment? So we also try to keep some of that in mind. And again, that's a little bit of extrapolation more as politicians than anything else, since we don't have a detailed public opinion survey done, you know, an exit poll. You know, you vote for this thing, what do you think you're getting from it? But we tried to at least have some sense of that.
Senator Rummel.
One last comment, and maybe we all can go home, but again, this is from the water thing. Many of us are familiar with the report that came out from the Freshwater Society, and at the end, they ask themselves, how will we know we are succeeding? And there are a number of very good indicators. But the one that struck me most and has really grown in my awareness is what we're about with water is to create a new ethic about how the public thinks about water, both in terms of conservation and in the way they treat and care for the water that, you know, comes off our streets or our farms. And to be successful with that, we have to have, and I think this goes on to what Senator Tacon was saying and Senator Saxhawk, we have to make these things visible to folks. And so while, as Senator Anderson explained, we have these big, broad processes or programs that are overarching, there are peppered through, and I'm glad that Representative Wagenius, like we have the St. Louis, the Duluth and St. Louis rivers, that, and we have a number of things in different parts of the state, and even the little logo that we keep talking about, that we can point to people so they can start to see it and see it in their own context of where they live. So the Red River Valley has something. The Root River has something. We have people have to be able to see what this means in a very concrete way. And then that civic engagement, because what we are, it doesn't matter which of the many, many strategies we use. I mean, it does matter. But that's not what this war is about. This war is about changing a way and a belief system about how we use water. And it's going to be successful only if we can capture the public imagination.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair. Sorry.
Senator Anderson.
That, just one more thing, and that leads to the concept of transparency and accountability.
for the public. That's one sort of overriding theme, that we want the public to be able to see what they're getting for their money, and that's why we need a website that is easily accessible where everyone can see where's the money going, what are the results. That's something we talked about a lot.
And that this was one legacy vote and four funds within the one constitutional amendment, and that website should have each of the funds and each of, so whatever people's interests may be, and most people have more than one, they would be able to have the same quality, the same overarching framework for that. I think that what you've expressed is what we heard and what we were trying for, and I think that we've got many more similarities than differences.
Okay, well, then let's just pass the Senate bill.
But I think we will have to continue to have discussions, and I think what you suggested for a short time tomorrow with Mr. Shepherd in light of this, we do have to discuss together, supplementing and supplanting.
Well, as I mentioned, the Senate expert is
well, maybe Saturday then, or
well,
whatever,
but
or
you know, let me talk to afterwards. If Mr. Shepherd would be ready to go, let me afterwards maybe talk about this with our staff and maybe see in Mr. Watson's absence if there's somebody else, or maybe, because I'm not sure exactly when Peter's getting back. But at some point, let's go ahead and let me figure it out on our side of it.
My agenda for today is completed.
Okay.
Although we could, if it wasn't so late, Senator, we could go on some more about with the philosophy of it all, because I think...
Well,
I think we're on the same track.
Thank you for asking, no. Madam Chair. We appreciate it.
Madam Chair, you and I talked about meeting at 8:30 tomorrow morning, this morning. I'll have the gavel. I think we've agreed we'll figure out something during the course of the day, and maybe not quite sure when, in terms of having discussion of the supplement, et cetera. I just would emphasize to everybody, although we have some similarities in the bill, and I think we're all on kind of the same general track, there are still some differences in approaches and particular appropriations and so on. And we got a lot of work. I'd like to start doing same or similar language off the bat and try to work through a lot of the bill tomorrow. And I know there are some conference committees, Madam Chair, and I haven't talked to Senate conferees about this, much less House conferees. There were some of the conference committees that were going past 1 o'clock. And I just can only emphasize again that we don't have lots of time. I know we've changed things in the Senate. I don't know what kind of dispensation we would need to do that. I know Senator Berglund a couple of times went to, Senator Berglund and Representative Huntley went to, I don't know, 5, 6 o'clock in the morning. And you and I know from our old days in this place, Senator Ferguson knows as well, that that's how the place really operates well. So.
Well.
Yeah, exactly.
We stay there all next time.
I'm not threatening that at the outset. But
no, you don't have to threaten it. We're ready.
Well, not tonight necessarily, but... Because we don't have work ready in terms of same or similar. We don't have the preparation to go ahead right now.
Representative Guinness.
May I make a suggestion that we think about, since this is
We just talked about our philosophies, and one of the things I heard that I hear in common is that we all want long-term planning, and perhaps if we started and developed and agreed upon long-term plans in each of the areas as the first step, then we would be on the same page going forward. And maybe instead of doing kind of the traditional same or similar language where I don't know that it gets us very far, that we look at the plan for the plans first. Because I did hear that as a common theme, as long-term thinking, that maybe we resolve that first would be one, a different way, but perhaps a useful way.
Maybe we wouldn't even have to adopt same and similars ever. Maybe we could adopt a committee bill, a joint committee bill.
I'm not sure.
Using the framework of what we've got before us and going forth, not for the appropriations for this round, but with the plans, get the framework and language for the plans down.
And then you mean appropriated money next year then? Is it?
Yes, or after we've got the planning part done, go over the appropriations for this round, then go forth after this for next year.
Okay, let me think about that.
This is, you said it, Senator, that this was different. People are expecting something different. People aren't expecting we give you an offer, you give us an offer, we do, let's take some from here and some from there. Let's do something together, creatively, that will make the people of Minnesota, the people that are following this, say, oh, they've got it. We've got it.
Well, I think both our bills attempt to do that. I want to be a little bit careful. I mean, obviously, we know that in terms of what we expect to be there, relative to dollars might not be there. But I think there would be some expectation on the part of people in the state who vote for this that we would take some action this year. And maybe I misunderstand a little bit.
I'm saying this year's action. We could quickly decide on this year's action, action.
I'm sorry, you're suggesting possibly action for this first year as opposed to 2 years. Is that what you're suggesting? Okay, I see what you mean.
Do the plan, and then do the plan for, not for this year, but for next year.
My only caution relative to that would be, might be an interesting approach. There are some appropriations, and I can think of a couple offhand. I have to go through the whole thing, where it's kind of a two-year appropriation, where it might be less easily divided. I'm thinking, but let me think about that. And my guess is that would be. What I'm suggesting might be the exception to your rule in that regard. But that might be one approach.
Senator Fredrickson.
Madam Chair, I would
I would go slow and not appropriating a bill this year that appropriates for 2 years, given the turmoil and acrimony surrounding our regular state budgets, and not knowing what may or may not happen and how acrimonious the next legislative session would be. I would feel a lot better if we make a 2-year appropriation this year. If we would want to, we could come back and adjust the appropriation next year if we have an appropriation bill for these funds next year. But I would want to see the funds appropriated this year for the next biennium.
Representative Genius.
But if I could, I think if we all agreed on plans to start with, some of this might work itself out. And I would just offer for your consideration that as I was looking at the side-by-sides, that integrating the House and Senate Parks Plan might be the easiest one to do as an exercise and also for a good outcome. So I think that's a possibility. I mean, they are very different in a way, but I could also, just looking at them, say, you could integrate these.
As I mentioned, I would agree with that, that it looks like the Parks proposal, Article 3, is probably the smallest article and the simplest article and the one that is probably most closely structured in a similar way. But that would lend itself then to what Senator Fredrickson suggests, that, okay, that's a place where we could maybe do, piggyback on your comment, that might be a place more easily, where you would more easily do clearly a 2-year appropriation, possibly. I'm not sure if that's what you're suggesting.
Actually, I was trying to say, maybe do the Parks Plan first, then the next easiest one maybe, or would you just pick the next one? I put that out as the first. Somebody else can pick the second. Do all the plans. Then we will have a big picture framework, because I think the appropriations probably are easier than, and they may fall more into place once we are on common ground with the plans.
Maybe, I'm not sure I totally agree with that, but maybe.
A different way of thinking.
I think
about
the
it.
Working through the Senator, I think the working through of the plans, the framework, the plans would also give us more understanding of our thinking so that the appropriations wouldn't be a big problem at all.
Okay. This is the most philosophical conference we've ever been.
We have a grave responsibility, and we want to do it right, Mr. Chair. Representative Lilly.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I just want to throw out that we've on the Parks and Trails part of the bill, we've noticed that Senator Ray's not, Doris Ray is not here, and I'm hoping we're not. Just hoping you're not considering doing it right away, 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. As far as, because we really worked hard just to kind of tell with other members here that it's kind of a very much a joint effort of many stakeholders, and there's a real delicate balance that is we're trying to achieve there. And it may appear to be calm, maybe a little calmer than some of the outdoor heritage part or the Lazard or whatever you want to say, but. It's fragile nonetheless, and so I hope that you allow us to continue to work together, and please consider not doing it right away in the morning, because I'd like to continue to work with the senator and others that have participated. So I just want to throw that out there. And then one other thought, too, I didn't even think about this till Senator Fredrickson was talking, and he said to be cautious and to be careful, and I just want to throw this out there. I mean, you know, to really be cautious and careful. We're not going to have money till the middle of summer, and we might consider, you know, maybe not doing anything till next year, as far as money. And, you know, I think I could defend that, saying we're being cautious and planning and we're going to do the good work of the people. But, you know, I think that's in your train of thought there. I think that's a very good suggestion. So
we could take the example of the Heritage Council. They appropriated and for the second year.
I just, you know, Madam Chair, I'm going to respond to that earlier. You know, we've got a number of people involved, and in the on the Senate side, we probably have, in the context of this conference committee, more people in the House, because what we did is we had four separate bills, ultimately authored by Senator Saxog, Senator Rummel, Senator Tomasoni, Senator Torres Ray, and then Senator Scogin was heavily involved as well. And so, you know, we don't have room for that many conferees. So we want the involvement of those individuals. So certainly with Senator Torres Ray having worked very hard in the park section, will we dash ahead tomorrow morning and then present it to her as a fait accompli? Obviously not. On the other hand, I guess my thought was maybe doing same or similar. I don't know if this is contrary to what Representative Mugenia suggests, but doing same or similar language, that irrespective of then of what plan we might look at or kind of what's the overlying philosophy, that we at least make a start toward putting a bill together, because ultimately we have to have a bill and a conference committee report. And I just am fearful of running out of time. If this was 2 weeks ago, I'd say, you know, great in terms of doing some very careful, thoughtful work. We're just not going to have that luxury. It just doesn't exist. And between floor sessions, the House and Senate, between, you know, to be real honest, with what the governor has proposed and done today, it's going to offer a different coloration the rest of the session on a lot of other stuff. So we're just going to have to, I mean, really work hard. And I really appreciate the comments, Madam Chair, from yourself. And I was just thinking, Senator Frederickson, in our older days, Senator Cronin never really talked like this in conference committees, did he?
Not very philosophical.
No, I don't think so.
See, you know, the commissioner brought it out earlier in the day. We just haven't had time. And so we've had a committee that's worked all since January, twice a week. Once a week for sure on all this outdoor heritage, clean water, parks and trails, arts and culture and history. Why did people vote yes? What are people's expectations? What are people's visions of what this money and how this money should be used for? For over 100 hours. And we still have questions in our mind. Maybe we should just wait till next year and work over the summer together and develop these plans and take our similarities and sames and do what the commissioner suggested, wait and really think about these proposals that are before us and get the input from the people in all regions of the state and talk, go up and see what Carla's thinking in Ely with her art center and what Phil Nussbaum is thinking about as a independent radio producer, and what Renata was talking about with her connectivity for the community and the community's touching and working together with the people from with the great interests in the four funds so that at the end we're all one. We're connected with all different kinds of people in the state that don't know anything about the legislative process, but they know what you said about clean water and is the driving force and the expectations of something different and the specialness of the money. Senator Fredrickson.
Madam Chair, that's all good, and I think we should do that. But on the other hand, folks voted to increase taxes to see some results, and I think we need to show them some results as soon as we can, not let the money sit at the Capitol and pile up, because that's what I would hear when went home. They didn't appropriate the money for the purposes we said right away, and they're just letting it pile up. I think they want to see with clean water that there are some straight pipe sewer systems that are cleaned up, some wetlands restored, some buffer strips put in, some evaluation of waters. I think with the heritage funds, I think they want to see some native prairie restored, some wetlands restored, some habitat restored. I think with the parks, I think they want to see some grants going out to regional parks, state parks being developed better than they have been, taken better care of. I think in the arts, I think they want to see more grants going out to regional arts councils so that we see more concerts, more plays, more visual arts out in our communities. And the flagship arts organizations in this state funded better, and I think they want to see it sooner rather than later. I think we should be making this first appropriations in due time, do some of the things you're talking about for the next round of funding. That's my take on what we should do.
And Madam Chair, I
Senator.
And Senator Ferguson reminds me, I think your concept that has to know, but listen to Senator Ferguson reminds me that one of the things I've learned during the course of this, and we talk about legacy, and I think at times we've almost overused that word. But again, the preservation, enhancement, support of what makes Minnesota, to all of us, a special place to live. But one of the things I learned during the course of this thing, over these last several years, is, when you lose that stream, or you lose, that piece of habitat, it doesn't come back. When you lose an historic site, it doesn't come back, and you don't get to recreate some of that stuff. And I recognize that if we don't take care of this particular lake today, okay, it's going to be there a year from now. On the other hand, is there a cumulative effect where you do lose things year to year, and they don't come back? What's the tipping point? Senator Anderson and Senator Rummel on the Senate side can speak much better than myself in terms of what the tipping point is on clean water. Not exactly a secret that I have some feelings about the arts cultural stuff, but so let me take a particular example in that regard. In Minneapolis, there was an incredible Theater Le June Lune, and I don't know how many people ever had a chance to go to the productions there, but some amazing stuff, and stuff that was nationally recognized. Well, they're gone, and they're never coming back. And so I think one of the things that we wanted to accomplish with this constitutional amendment was to make sure we didn't lose the quality of life in Minnesota. And so maybe that kind of, I'm kind of piggybacking on Senator Fredrickson's comments, but we want to be a little bit careful in making sure that we take those steps. So I think that's what people were looking for when they voted. They wanted to see our protection of the quality of life. So the question is, what's that kind of dividing line between what you're suggesting and what Senator Fredrickson is suggesting?
And we heard that too. And I heard that very well. When we started at Fond du Lac Reservation, the language program, the Ojibwe language program, we had 8 elders. Now we have 3.
Okay.
The numbers are going down in the Dakota language and the Ojibwe language, and we can't afford to wait much longer because we're going to be down to 1 and 8.
Okay, well,
in that respect, I understand that, but
So there's perhaps there's room for compromise here.
And Madam Chair, it's possible we made a mistake. It was the position of leadership in both bodies that we should take care of the finance bills, take care of what we absolutely have to do, you know, to keep government operating and so on. And have we left ourselves a little bit short of time? Possibly, but we'll just have to deal with that accordingly.
But we also have to do not plans set in concrete, but plans where the framework is established and the benchmarks are talked about and where there's outcomes expected before any money is put out.
There are some subdivisions.
I think. We're going to have a busy day tomorrow, Senator.
I bet we will.
This meeting is adjourned.
All right. See you tomorrow.
Got an idea of an agenda?
Well, I would like to do Sam or something.
8:30.
And I better figure out.
8:30 a.m.